really excellent and, okay. and one to be commended.
Cutting knife crime. How did he do it? That's tomorrow. I'm done for today. James O'Brien's the other side of the news on LBC. I'm back with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and it is that story that I am intrigued by first this morning. The three Fs feature, I think, facts, feelings, and footballification. A Labour minister, a minister for homelessness, no less, is receiving something of a kicking because tenants were removed from her flat with plenty of notice, but nonetheless required to find somewhere new to live. And lo and behold, the flat goes back on the market with a £700 increase in the required rent. There are quite a lot of questions here, not least, what on earth is a homelessness minister doing in the landlord class? Has she done anything wrong? Has she done something very wrong? Or is it one rule for politicians and another for the rest of us?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock. Migrants who've arrived in the UK after crossing the English Channel have been detained for the first time under a new one-in, one-out deal. They were held by Border Force yesterday and could be returned to France within weeks. It's not clear how many people are being detained. The Home Secretary, Yvette Cooper, says she will robustly defend any legal challenges.
No one should be in any doubt. Anyone who arrives from now on is eligible for immediate detention and return. And this pilot will now build because we are determined that no one should be making this journey, and this is a vile trade in people.
The Kremlin says there has been an agreement with the US for a meeting between Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump. A Russian official has claimed it could take place in the coming days. The White House hasn't yet commented, but said yesterday a summit on Ukraine could be held very soon. Ministers have announced plans for tougher restrictions on cowboy cosmetic procedures. It follows huge growth in the unregulated treatments being carried out in homes, hotels and pop-up clinics. Hundreds of people have been maimed by botched Brazilian butt lifts and filler injections. The homelessness minister has been accused of evicting her tenants before increasing the rent on her property. Reports say Rushanara Ali hiked the asking price by £700 a month, just weeks after the previous rental contract ended. Sources close to the minister say it was only relisted because it hadn't sold. Health Minister Karen Smith was asked about the story when she spoke to LBC this morning.
I don't know the details of that. I know that she has complied with... Well, I know, need to know that she complies with the law and that we are, as a government, absolutely working on... private rented sector is a hugely important sector. I'm here speaking to you from Bristol. It's where, you know, we've had to do lots of work on, and that's what our Renters' Rights Bill has brought forward to protect tenants.
And another cut in interest rates is expected this lunchtime. Most economists are expecting the Bank of England to reduce the base rate by a quarter point to 4% at midday. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading at 91.64. That's up 21. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 14. LBC weather, sunshine and showers across Scotland and Northern Ireland. Mostly dry and cloudy elsewhere. A high of 25 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Save with EETV and get the ultimate flex.
Is anyone up for Squid Game on Netflix?
What about The Rookie on Now?
Wait, I need to catch up.
No spoilers here. With EETV, you can switch up your subscription so you never miss unmissable shows.
So I can watch whatever I want.
That's right. Switch on Netflix now and Discovery Plus to suit you. All on our ultra-reliable broadband. That's why TV lovers are choosing EE. Search EETV deals today.
New customers, 56% UK availability. Terms apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's all a little bit the thick of it, isn't it? A homelessness minister is on the front page of a newspaper today for the alleged offence of chucking tenants out of a flat that she owns and moving in new tenants at a £700 higher rent. Rushanara Ali is the minister of whom we speak, and she has spoken out in the past. There are so many moving parts to this story that I am going to somewhat stentoriously insist that you pay attention. All right. Good morning, by the way. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. She has spoken out in the past about private renters being exploited. That's the first. In fact, I'm going to do this like a professional grown-up radio presenter. I'm going to keep a list of all the moving parts in this story. All right. So I think, and you, as always, are welcome to tell me why I'm wrong. I think the most important element in the story is the fact that she's a homelessness minister. So that's the first moving part. I think the second most important bit is that she has spoken out in the past about private renters being exploited. She's a Labour minister, so she describes that as a bad thing. Of course, there are probably people in Parliament who think that, and indeed the media, who think that private renters being exploited is a wonderful thing, and good luck to all the landlords doing it. Other moving parts include the fact that the tenants in the flat, I beg your pardon, an East London townhouse, no less. The tenants in the East London townhouse were given, these are important, 4 months' notice that they were moving out. They were offered an opportunity to stay there while the house was marketed for sale. I'm taking everything on trust here from both the tenant and the spokesperson for the minister. If anything changes, if the parts start moving faster or if a part stops moving at any point in the next hour, I will bring the information to you immediately. So 4 months' notice, but in capital letters, an invitation to stay while they tried to sell the house. Okay? And they failed to sell the house, at which point the agencies put the property back on the market. It was relisted for rent, and the asking price, as it were, for the new tenants was, and the transactions were handled by agents, was £4,000 a month, some £700 a month, or get the abacus out, Keith, about £225 a week more. With four tenants, it's an increase of about 50-something pounds a week more than had previously been agreed. If you want to get in early, you can hit the numbers now if you want. It's a simple question of what do you think? 0345 606 0973. So those, I think, are the facts. Feel free to let me know if you feel that I've missed any out. Now, facts, feelings and footballification. If I'm going to use F words, I should probably be slightly careful about not stumbling over them in case the words that reach your ears are rather different from the ones that I intended to leave my lips. But those are the three Fs this morning underpinning all of the moving parts. The facts, the feelings and, of course, the footballification, because I'm only human. I mean, the horrors visited upon this country over the last 14 years and the continuing hideousness of the party that's grown up even further to the right than the Tories mean that I feel quite defensive about the current government. Please, God, give somebody a chance to fix the mess that the country is currently in, and turn down, if you can, the volume of attacks coming from very carefully cultivated institutions on the people trying to fix the mess caused by precisely the politicians that these institutions put into power. And I'd give you the list again, shall I? Austerity, Brexit, Boris Johnson, Liz Truss. You could go on, but goodness me, the idea that we should be hankering for a return to any of that is beyond calculation. So, feelings, and I'm mentioning that because I need to guard against footballification as well. I don't want to be more defensive of this minister than I would be of a Tory minister, and I certainly don't want to be more attacking as a way of sort of insulating against fears of footballification than I would be if it was somebody else. Because my feelings say, how the hell can a homelessness minister even be a landlord in the first place? How can anybody whose brief includes speaking out against private renters being exploited put her property in the hands of an agency whose job is to get her as much money as possible? 0345 606 0973. But if it was your property and it was in the hands of an agent, I told you there are a lot of moving parts, and the agent said, oh, we're going to put it on for £4,000. You haven't been able to sell it, so you're putting it back on the rental market. The previous tenants elected not to stay there while you were in the process of trying to sell it. And you learn from your agent. They've got another townhouse next door. The house next door. Oh, we're renting out the house next door as well. We've got $4,000 a month for that. What should we put yours on for? Who here would say, oh, £3,300 a month, please? This is a moving part, right? Because I can hold two thoughts in my head at the same time. I'm weird like that. I don't think the homelessness minister should be a landlord. I don't think it's possible, really, to be a landlord without, in some sense, exploiting private renters. Okay? And I don't mean that as being relevant to homelessness. I mean that in the case of a nice townhouse in London, that is probably going to be rented by people who would rather be buying a property, but because of the proliferation of landlords in recent years and because of the state of the market, they are not currently able to. Because they can afford to buy a house. They just can't afford to buy it for themselves because they haven't been able to get the deposit together and they end up buying it instead for a landlord. So she's got no business whatsoever, in my view, and I can't back it up with facts because it's all about the feelings, being a landlord. But I don't think she's done much wrong in this specific case because she's not contributing to homelessness. She's contributing to a completely different facet of the housing crisis, which is the difficulty that people now have, professional, hardworking people now have in getting on the housing ladder. But the kicker, the killer, the point of no return and the grounds for calling for her to be gone by tea time is the line about private renters being exploited, because she's put herself in this really ridiculous position where, in order to be morally consistent, she would have to demand that her agents rent the house out for less than they can get. Now, I'm just going to take a moment to remove my halo and polish it briefly, okay? My politics made it most uncomfortable a million years ago when we sort of accidentally became landlords for very similar reasons. As our house sale fell through, but our house purchase did not, and we were just about able to juggle money and buy the house we wanted to buy, despite not having sold the house we wanted to sell, but we couldn't afford to sustain that while we waited to sell it, so we moved tenants in. But we contacted a local social housing company, which meant that we got less than the market rate. And I don't want to sound holier than thou or like Billy Big Bananas, but it wasn't very difficult to do. Looking back now, I wonder whether it was a little bit idealistic. Certainly, you know, as I think about the future my children face, every quid that I allowed to slip through my fingers in years past feels a little heavier than it did at the time, but that's how we operated, that's how we thought. We thought it would be wrong to contribute to the housing crisis by putting a previously privately owned home on the rental market for private tenants. We put it instead in the hands of a social housing company who paid us more than enough to cover our mortgage, or at least enough to cover our mortgage. I can't remember the exact figures, but did not pay us as much as we would have got if we'd given it to Foxtons to rent out or the local estate agent. And that, I think, I know it's a bit personal, but I'm going to ask you to be personal, perhaps. I think that's really relevant. I think if I had been speaking out about private renters being exploited and I had found myself in a situation where tenants had been removed from my home because I was trying to sell it and they chose not to stay on during that process because it would be open-ended and uncertain and you want the certainty of a lease and the security of protection. And then the house sale fell through and I found myself thinking, well, I'm going to have to rent it out again. I listen, you may know more about this than I do, and it's how old is she, my oldest? It's 17 years, give or take, since I found myself in this situation. But it was really blooming easy to pick up the phone and get a social housing company to come round, social housing organisation to come round, and have a look at the house that we were living in at the time. So there are options here. The defence is built upon the idea of what else could she have done? She couldn't say to the agent, if I phrase it like this, who's going to say to an agent, please put my house on the market for $5,000 or however many a year it is, for 700 quid a month? What's that? So 8,400 pounds. Memo to self, do not do maths on the radio. It's not your strong suit. £8,400 a year. Could you put it on the market for £8,400 a year less than you think you can get? Yes. No, I'm terribly sorry. I know that you work on commission and that you're renting out the house next door for £4,000 a month, but I insist that you put the house that I own on the market for considerably less than that, please, and rent it out to people who are not the same as the people that were previously paying £3,300 a year. And then I worry that the footballification is kicking in. So all I've got on what she could have done differently is deliberately and consciously seeking less money than she could have sought for the property that she owned. And I wonder how that sounds to you. Does that sound like something really stupid to do? Does that sound like something daft? Does it sound like something noble? Does it sound like something silly? I don't know. So that's question number one. Has she done anything wrong? 03456060973. And because I have, you can. Blend the facts with your feelings to your heart's content. The second question, and I find myself leaning towards yes on this, which really surprises me. And listen, if you just indulge me for a moment and play the role of my on-air therapist, I worry that sometimes I'm so concerned about being a victim of footballification, I end up pushing too hard. So if you think of footballification as like in Star Wars, in the rubbish room when the walls start closing in, and you're worried that the walls of footballification are closing in, so you end up pushing too hard to ensure that you're not being biased, you're not indulging in the sort of behaviour that right-wing media indulges in every minute of every day of every week of every month. Complete double standards, extraordinary double standards, triple, quadruple, quintuple, sextuple standards. My first band was called the Sextuple Standards. You're pushing back too hard. So I find myself thinking that her position is really shaky this morning. Because she said private renters should not be exploited, and well, I guess that's question three, isn't it? Are private renters being exploited? 03456060973 is the number that you need. So give me some more moving parts, if you can think of them, but answer these questions. What has she done wrong? There you go. That's a loaded question. You can translate that, if you want, into has she done anything wrong? But I'm going to ask you the loaded question, because, of course, you can answer nothing. What has she done wrong? Should she be a landlord? Because I think you could say, what has she done wrong? Nothing. Should she be a landlord? No. And that seems almost cognitively dissonant, right? Should she be a landlord at all? Should the homelessness minister be a landlord at all? 03456060973. And then, should she resign? I've got, what has she done wrong? She's exploited private renters when she had a choice not to. Should she be a landlord? Not necessarily, no. You can be a landlord without exploiting private renters, as I've just demonstrated. And number three, should she resign? I'm really sorry. I'm 52-48. It's the infernal flipping ratio again. And that means that it's a pendulum. That means it can swing back at any moment. Should she resign? Yeah. I think she should. You can't have a homelessness minister contributing to the homeless, not the homeless crisis. You can't have a homelessness minister contributing to the housing crisis. 03456060973 is the number you need. And remember that it is not unreasonable to expect higher standards of behaviour from our politicians. In the world before Brexit and Boris Johnson, it was normal to at least expect higher standards of behaviour from our politicians, until the sort of never explain, never apologise, lie like a thief and take responsibility for nothing took hold of Downing Street in 2019. Just compare Theresa May to Boris Johnson, compare Amber Rudd to Boris Johnson. Before, honour, integrity and honesty were completely removed from the table of British politics, it was not controversial to suggest that politicians should sometimes resign even though they've done nothing technically wrong. Because A, appearances matter, and B, the people that govern us should abide by an even higher standard of behaviour or even higher moral codes than the rest of us do. So come at it through that as well. I think she's got to go. You can't have a homelessness minister who is, as the headline describes it, ejecting her tenants and hiking the rent. Whatever the background to it is, if she has previously called out landlords for exploiting private renters. Her position, I suggest to you, is untenable. But let's find out what you think. 0345 6060973 is the number you need. It's 1019.
LBC.
Pump six in this meal deal, please.
Let's play Rate My BP Meal Deal.
Okay.
You chose an M&S chicken and bacon pasta, Magnum ice cream and a Wild Bean Cafe iced latte. That's a 10. A perfect warm weather combo.
Have I won a holiday?
No. BP Meal Deal. One deal, millions of combinations. All for £6. T's and C's apply, subject to availability at BP M&S stores only. For details, see bp.com/latest offers.
What makes match day? You know Maggie's cafe is the vibe.
Mate, piking all day, every day.
Mark, the cabbie, bigger fan than we are.
Banging out some Not the Top 20 on the way to the game.
It's a great podcast.
All the expert pundits down the dog and duck.
Oh, Kebab Palace, he gets the chilli garlic ratio spot on.
Match day is about more than just the game. It's an experience shared with local businesses at the heart of every EFL club and community. That's why we're proud to support the businesses behind the badge. Sage, official accounting software partner of the EFL.
Brands that use radio are 49% more likely to get noticed. Amplify your advertising at radiocentre.org. Assuming you want to get noticed.
Huh. Have you ever wondered what a sandwich sounds like? Not much to it, is there? Unless, of course, it's a Walker's sandwich. Mmm, that is good. Now that's what Asani should sound like. Go all crispin with Walker's. Delicious.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
My resolve is hardening. Be aware, be very aware, because there is another moving part to this story in the simplest of terms, the Renters' Rights Bill, which is not currently law, but which will become law next year. And it prohibits landlords in England who have ended a tenancy order for any reason, including because they want to sell a house, from relisting it later for a higher rent for at least 6 months after tenants have moved out. So I think she's got to go. And she has broken the law that this government she is part of are introducing next year. That, well, see what you think. And I should probably say that the people waiting to talk to me rang in before I dropped that final moving part into the mix. So it'll be interesting to see whether that shifts any pendulums. 21 after 10 is the time. We've got a couple of phone lines still free. 0345 6060973 is the number you need. Elliot is in Maida Vale. Elliot, what would you like to say?
Hey, James. A few things. I'd like to say, I think the Renters Reform Bill will absolutely, it is a move in the right direction on that front. I think the issue that we'll find is there will be an awful lot of landlords in London, especially, who want to exit the market because they think that it's going to become untenable to be a landlord. And as a result, there will be fewer properties to rent in London. And from a supply and demand standpoint, rent will increase.
Who will live in them? The ones that were previously rented and aren't anymore?
I would imagine because, I mean, so I was an estate agent previously.
Yeah.
And I think there's
what are you
an
doing
awful
now?
Lot of property. I'm a bricklayer by trade, James.
Fantastic. You got it all covered. You can build it and then you can sell it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm also a landlord.
Go for the full house. Are you also a tenant?
I am also.
Hallelujah! We've got the lot. He can build it. He can sell it. He can rent it. He can rent it out as well. He can lease it out as well. You're not a government minister, are you, by any chance, Elliot?
I'm not. Oh, and well. I think, on balance, if I were, I probably would get out of the landlord business.
Well, this is what I wanted to nudge you toward. So, the rights and wrongs of the Renters' Rights Bill, notwithstanding, what is it about all of those moving parts that I just listed, culminating in that final one, that she finds herself at odds with the very law that her own government is set to introduce next year, that pushes you to what? To either she should resign, she should offer herself for a reshuffle, she should get rid of the property properly and stay in post? I don't know. What do you think?
So a few things on that front, and to add to the moving parts, yes, if I can. When it comes to this tenancy, you're absolutely right in saying, so a few things. 4 months seems quite reasonable when it comes to notice. It's, yeah, more than the 2 months that you have to give someone. When it comes to the increase in rent, you're absolutely right. If it's a house in multiple occupancy, it's an additional £50 per week per person living there, which doesn't seem completely unreasonable. But when it comes to the reasons for the increase in rent, I think there are a few things. Mortgage rates historically have been very, very low. Interest rate wise, we were paying 2%, and I think landlords.
You're turning it into a property phone-in, and it's a politics phone-in.
Completely understood.
You're right, I'll take your call when we want to go through all the changes to the property market and the difficulties that it throws up. A homelessness minister, a minister for homelessness who's spoken out against tenants being exploited, ejected her tenants, albeit entirely lawfully and even with more leeway than she was required to provide, and then put the house back on the market at an increased rent in circumstances that will be illegal next year after her own government's renters' rights bill is brought in. Should she, in the words of Ray Davis, should she stay, almost of Ray Davis, should she stay or should she go?
Okay, so when we're talking about her political post, I think she should absolutely maintain her political post.
Wow.
When it comes to the being a landlord, from a PR perspective, if I were her neighbour popping around for a cup of tea, I'd be saying, on balance, get out of the landlord business because it's not a very good look.
So hang on to the job, but don't hang on to the house. Okay. It's a view. It's an interesting view because... it is only because she is a homelessness minister that she's got herself into trouble. A homelessness minister and a landlord. The idea of chalking up this indiscretion as regrettable, but staying on as homelessness minister, as opposed to your suggestion, which is your suggestion, as opposed to falling on your sword precisely because you should have no business exploiting private renters when you've spoken out about it, it's an intriguing dichotomy, Elliot. Thank you. Jeff's in Harrow. Jeff, what do you reckon?
Hi, I reckon she should 100% go. And my thinking behind that, it's the hypocrisy. It's like an animal welfare campaigner selling fur coats. It's completely...
Hang on, stop, just shut up for a minute, Jeff. I want to have a think about that. It's like an animal welfare campaigner. Yeah, all right, I can run with that. I'm not sure it's exactly the same, but it has a similar feel, doesn't it?
It's got the same whiff of hypocrisy. And if we're talking about...
It's Joe Strummer, not Ray Davis. Oh, no, I've dropped a massive clanger already today. Should I stay or should I go? It wasn't the Kinks, it was the Clash. Forgive me. Carry on, Jeff. So why? Yes. Why does it? Because... Well, go on, you tell me.
Well, if you think about it, from my perspective... And I know it's not a property thing, it's politics, but the housing crisis has been massively fueled by the buy-to-let landlord market.
Which they're trying to undo. That's part of what the Renters' Rights Bill is designed to achieve.
Yeah, so you've had people with capital have been able to buy lots of properties, and people without capital are having to pay those people to increase the amount of capital they have. Which it just seems like, I mean, I've got skin in the game, and I could tell the last guy had skin in the game just because the way he was talking, he was clearly passionate about the landlord sector.
Sure. He's a landlord and a tenant, a bricklayer and a former estate agent. Beat that, Jeff.
I've got a 32-year-old daughter. She's a Depsy head teacher. Her partner's in a decent job. And they're renting a flat in Northwood, and they're paying about $3,500 a month for it.
It's incredible,
and
isn't it?
They cannot. And they both got really good, decent jobs. You know, they're not rich, but the prospects of them being able to buy a property are getting further and further away. And I've got a 21-year-old who's just left university. What chance has she got? You know, it is fueled by the few having lots of property.
Do you want another moving part?
Go on.
She's got two.
Oh, right, okay.
She's got two rental properties.
Yeah.
And she's served as Minister for Homelessness since July 2024. I mean, I'm not being devil's advocate. I'm just suggesting that this is how some elements of inequality persist. The people who are comfortable with it say to the people who aren't, you're not allowed any of this pie at all, because we're going to keep all of it. So if she put, but so the house that we're discussing today is on the market. What I mean, she puts it on the market, it gets bought by someone who's already got 30 properties. And the problem you're describing arguably gets worse, not better, in that moment.
Yeah, of course it does, yeah.
So
it absolutely does. And the argument about, I mean, and you rightly pulled that other chap up on it about, well, landlords are going to get out of the market. That, for me, that comes from the same family of arguments as private schools, we can't pay the VAT. Everyone, it's exactly
hang on, I'm just going to get my violin out.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. I've got a cupboard full of small violins.
Yes, exactly that. And it is extraordinary how poverty denial goes hand in hand with wealth fetishization. There's no such thing as hunger in this country. There's no such thing as poverty. Nobody is running out of money before they run out of months. They're doing what? They're putting VAT on school fees? They're coming after the landlord? This is outrageous. Man the barricade. So it is for you. It's a bit of a no-brainer. She's got to go.
100%.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. And again, I don't know how you tell where footballification starts and the facts end, but it just seems to me that you can't be the homelessness minister railing against the exploitation of private tenants if you are exploiting private tenants, even if you're going to blame it on an agent. It is, as I've demonstrated with my own very limited experience, that is an option. That is not the only course you can follow. So I've introduced another moving part there in the course of the conversation with Jeff. There are two properties, not quite an empire, but certainly not an accident either. And perhaps this counts as another one. It is still listed for sale. As far as I can aware, it's currently listed for sale for a bit less than it was on before when they failed to sell it in November. So it is still listed for sale. Does that mitigate her offence? She is trying to sell it. I don't know. It just gets more and more complicated, actually, the more moving parts we reveal. But the sense, the feeling that Jeff and I share is that the homelessness minister has no business being a landlord. And if she has no choice about being a landlord, which sounds odd, but I have found myself in that situation myself, then she could have conducted herself in a much more, in a way much more aligned with her government's policies, not to mention imminent laws, imminent legislation. Thomas Watts is here now with your headlines.
The first migrant detentions have been made under the one-in, one-out deal with France. An unspecified number of people were held after crossing the English Channel in a small boat yesterday. Russian officials say Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin could hold a meeting on Ukraine in the coming days. It follows the US special envoy Steve Witkoff's trip to Moscow for talks. The homelessness minister, Reshanara Ali, is under pressure over reports about her rental property in London. It's claimed she increased the rent by £700 a month within weeks of her tenant's contract ending. LBC weather, sunshine and showers across Scotland and Northern Ireland, mostly dry and cloudy elsewhere, a high of 25 degrees.
LBC.
The new Big Arch has arrived at McDonald's. A burger so iconic, it's got its own sauce. A signature Big Arch sauce. Sounds serious, doesn't it? It is. Seriously good. Big Arch. For big McDonald's hunger. Until 9th of September, from 11 a.m, participating restaurants only, subject to availability.
At Kia, we're excited to announce that the refined new Kia Sportage is available in showrooms now. Secure your test drive today to explore its advanced technology and stylish, sporty design. Order before the 30th of September to get 5.9% APR representative and £1,000 PCP finance deposit contribution. Search the new Kia Sportage to book your test drive. T's and C's apply. Kia Finance.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ADVICE to 78900 to find out more. That's ADVICE to 78900.
It's a chilled summer's day. The twins are splashing in the paddling pool while Mrs. Thing puts her feet up. She's proper chuffed, having saved money on a British Gas boiler service. It's like an MOT for your boiler, just £79, reduced from £109. bliss. Well, it was nice while it lasted. British Gas. Taking care of things. Visit britishgas.co.uk to learn more and see full T's and C's. Sale ends 9th of September 2025. Offer available to new boiler service contract customers.
Brands that use radio are 49% more likely to get noticed. Amplify your advertising at radiocentre.org. Assuming you want to get noticed.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60973.
10:34 is the time. So, what has she done wrong? Okay, I want you to explain it. I've explained what I think, but I want you to explain what she has done wrong. I think anyone minded to defend her, speak of the homelessness minister, Roshanara Ali, who has been found, or at the very least reported, to have ejected tenants from a house she owns in London, and then months later put it back on the market with a vastly increased rent. She's acted entirely within the law as it stands, but when the current government's renters' rights bill is introduced next year, she would have been in breach of it. But she gave the tenants plenty of notice. She offered them the opportunity to stay there while she tried to sell it. She failed to sell it, so she moved new people in, and it's still on the market. So they live there at an inflated rent in the knowledge that the tenancy is somewhat insecure. So there's a lot of moving parts. But I want you to tell me why she is in the wrong, why she is not in the wrong, why she should resign or why she should not resign. I wasn't expecting things to feel like this at the moment, but and as I said, it's a 52-48 on the resignation issue, and I'm not going to provide a running commentary on whether that score is ticking up or ticking down, but I'm still of the view. Okay, one more caveat, all right? Starmer keeps holding his own ministers to the very highest account. Okay, people are required to resign or let go for the kind of offences that Boris Johnson wouldn't even have noticed, or that Boris Johnson would actually have either done himself or actively encouraged. And I welcome that. I find it hugely refreshing. But I wonder if it actually achieves anything beyond reminding us of the importance of integrity. But people who don't think integrity is important. Remember, Suella Braverman was writing in the Daily Telegraph yesterday about the integrity of the legal profession, despite the only thing she's known to have done when she was a lawyer to the general public is fib about contributing to a textbook that she simply did some photocopying for on one occasion. As soon as she was asked questions about it, the entire claim was removed from the online CV at the barrister's chambers where she plied her trade. So some people who claim to care about integrity clearly don't, or they think integrity for thee, but not for me. So I worry that if Starmer leans on her to go, he'll lose another presumably capable politician for offences that are relatively minor and technical, and he will win precisely no brownie points or kudos from voters because I don't know why, because we're not living in a country where it matters anymore. As a bloke in Milton Keynes, I've lost the message saying, don't forget Angela Rayner sold her council house. That's the world Keir Starmer is operating in. Angela Rayner sold her council house, utterly irrelevant to this story, and indeed irrelevant to Angela Rayner's record and integrity. But the right-wing media did such a good job of seeding it as something to be embarrassed about. A bit like Keir Starmer's curry, do you remember that? Just putting so much effort, huge amounts of effort, into turning a relatively innocuous and entirely innocent act into the greatest crime since the Brinksmack bullion robbery, while they were waving through Johnson's egregious offences on a daily basis. It's insane how double standards it is. But I guess that's the point, isn't it? If you want to be an antidote to double standards, you have to hold yourself and your politicians, your ministers, to a much higher standard than previous administrations did, and indeed to a higher standard than you would hold members of the public. So she's got to go. I'm now being told it wasn't even Joe Strummer who sang that song. It was Mick Jones. So this is an extraordinary faux pas. I'm going to consider my position, I think. Not only did I misattribute Should I Stay or Should I Go to the Kinks instead of the Clash, I fear I may now have misattributed the vocals to Joe Strummer instead of Mick Jones. It's a miracle I'm still in a job. 10:38 is the time. John's in Bridge End. John, what would you like to say?
Good morning, James.
Hello, John.
She's got to go. Not because she's done anything wrong, but because of the image it's created.
Yeah.
If she'd have sold the house, she would have had the same bad vibe as well.
Why?
Because she's made a lot of money and there's a greedy landlord cashing in. In my opinion, she should have gone to the council, local charities, or there's a well-known company, if I can say their name on here, Clear Springs.
What do they do? They just, well, whatever, they, yeah, sure.
They rent the houses for the government.
Okay, fine.
So she could have gone to those and parked the property on a five-year contract with one of those.
Yeah.
They're desperate for properties, and their hands would have been clean. Their hands cannot be made clean now, what she's done.
Do you speak as a tenant, as a landlord, as a government minister, a bricklayer, or an estate agent?
Landlord.
Okay.
And Labour supporter.
Oh, okay. So how can and are your properties in the circumstances that you described?
No. We're...
So why is a Labour supporter allowed to do this, but a Labour minister isn't?
We're all trying to get out of the game, the people I know.
Oh, really?
Because we've had what's called Rentsmart Wales down here, which is a foretaste of what you're going to get next year. And trust me, it's horrendous. It'll put tenant versus landlord on an unbelievable scale.
So how many properties have you got, if you don't mind me asking?
16.
What?
16.
16?
Yeah.
Well, that didn't happen by accident, did it?
No, it was, I decided many years ago, a pension would never be big enough for what I wanted, so I started investing in houses.
And, you know, 50% of me says that's absolutely perfectly reasonable, but the other 50% of me was nodding along when you were describing the damage that landlords have done to the sort of housing market and the reasons why Rishanara Ali's behaviour is in your I mean, I don't know that we're going to get many landlords with 16 properties calling for her to resign because she's got one or two.
No, it's not that she's done anything wrong. It's the perception. Greedy. They just put greedy in front of her name. And
well,
she's
not as greedy as you, mate. You're eight times greedier than her. You've got 16 properties.
Mr. O'Brien, I'm selling four to my tenants.
Oh, well, I don't know. I mean, she could have done that as well, couldn't she, of course? But the tenants wouldn't have been in a position to buy it. Yeah. What's the biggest issue here for you? What's the absolute deal-breaker?
Okay, I'll pick my words carefully.
Yeah, please.
It's not called an AST in South Wales, it's called a contract now. Yeah. And we've got to give people 6 months' notice.
Right.
Okay. What happens then, they go to the local housing charity or the council, and the council will say, you stay in the house until your landlord has taken you to court.
So because her government is bringing in the kind of legislation in England that you're already dealing with in Wales, and you find that legislation to be deeply suboptimal, the idea that she's somehow swerved it is particularly egregious to you.
Yeah, you look enough. The tenants in the eyes, and you can see they hate you.
I've run out of tiny violins, mate. I used them all up on VAT on school fees story. No, I'm joking.
I can't get out of the houses quick enough sometimes.
No, and there's great landlords out there. And an awful lot of your tenants, presumably, don't want to or won't be able to buy a house in a million years. And that's not your fault. We often conduct these conversations in a way that forgets about people who rent through choice opposed to necessity.
I've got six tenants for over 15 years.
Yes, exactly.
So it's not what she's done. She has done nothing wrong. But you know what the Daily Mail and the Express are going
to
make of
this. Yeah, but then we're back to the thing I was trying to articulate previously about integrity. You bend over too far because you're worried about what the right-wing media are going. I think I'd have treated this story very differently if it hadn't been on the front page of the I.
Yeah.
But anyway, there you go. 16 houses.
It could also be pointed out that she was trying to get out before her act comes in.
I think that is almost certainly true, don't you? I mean, it could be a coincidence. But you know what? If you had Alistair Campbell on the case, or what's Peter Capaldi's character in The Thick of It called? What's his name? Malcolm Tucker. They would point that as a positive. They would say, what you have to understand, John, is that the reason that our very own homelessness minister is trying to get rid of her rental properties before our new legislation kicks in is proof of how good our new legislation is.
Yeah.
It's going after all landlords, even the ones that sit in our cabinet.
I spoke to a local council empty house officer a couple of days ago.
Yes.
And he told me if he put nobody else on his housing list, he wouldn't clear his list in 18 years.
And that's why they're trying to get people like you out of the landlord business. But you suggest, and I suspect with some justification, that this may turn out not to be the magic bullet that many people in politics and, of course, many people in properties are hoping that it will be. Thank you, John. That was a fascinating perspective, and actually a justified one, a well-evidenced one. I've got 16 houses, and I think I've got 16 properties, 16 rental properties. If you're just tuning in, I'm talking about John. John's got 16 rental properties, and he thinks that Roshanara Ali should resign because of how she has conducted herself with regard to hers. And she's got two, but we're only talking about one of them. And what she has done is lawfully evict tenants who were welcome to stay while she tried to sell the house, but would obviously then be required to move out at much shorter notice than the 4 months she had given them. Fail to sell the house, leave it on the market, move new tenants in who are paying 700 quid a month more than the previous tenants were. And it is the disgruntled previous, one of the disgruntled previous tenants who has gone to the paper with this story. You can defend that, but when you introduce the renters' rights bill that would make precisely this conduct unlawful, and her previous comments about the exploitation of renters in the private sector, and her job as a homelessness minister, I'm with John. I'm with John and I'm with Jeff. I think that the position looks very, very close, perilously close is one of my favourite phrases, perilously close to untenable.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Is there not something deeply, deeply unreasonable about having saved into a private pension, perhaps all your working life? It is a private pension, and yet, at the point at which you sadly leave this mortal coil, you would not be able to pass that down to your children without paying inheritance tax on it if it qualifies for it. And then income tax would follow through. I mean, that, a double taxation on your private, I think that's brutal. Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on your radio, on Global Player and the new LBC app.
Do it for your wife, who told you to pick up bread, but instead you picked up Fred, your grandson, again. And now your daughter is calling because he missed football. That's the fourth time this month. You can wave his future career goodbye. If you don't do it for you, do it for your wife and little Freddy.
Book a free hearing test today at bootshearingcare.com and save up to £300 with our free technology upgrade. Boots, with you for life. T's and C's apply. See website for details.
At ulisprosperity.com, you buy the car and we pay you up to £600 per month in rental income. For conditions, visit ulisprosperity.com.
With Lidl Plus Bakery Spin, simply shop and spin to win a free Lidl Bakery coupon on every shop. Download Lidl Plus and get at the Retail Industry Awards Supermarket of the Year. 18 plus GB residents, various prizes available, subject to availability, ends 20th of August. Full T's and C's apply. See lidl.co.uk/spin.
At TfO, we're opening up more of London for everyone with step-free access. We're continuing to improve accessibility at many of our stations, and now over 200 stations and counting have step-free access, including the entire Elizabeth Line, DLR and all tram stops. That is how we're making the greener way to travel more accessible to all. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Arenas full of fans. Stars taking it to another level. The excitement, the glory, the action. And you could be behind it all. Kickstart your career in esports with Global Academy's new esports production sixth form course. Get the skills and knowledge to join a fast-growing media industry. And you could even join Global Academy's own esports team. Thinking what next after GCSEs? Then find out more about the esports production sixth form course at globalacademy.com.
Who's a good human? Alex is. Because today's dog walk with Lulu the Corgi has turned into an off-road adventure. But wherever Lulu's nose takes her, Alex will always gladly follow. That's why he also chooses Butternut Box for Lulu's meals. Freshly prepared and served straight from the fridge, helping Lulu thrive from nose to tail. Meaning one less trek for Alex as we deliver each box straight to your door. Ready to join thousands of good humans? Go to butternutbox.com to fetch 25% off your first box with code GOODHUMAN.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It's 10:48 and you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where, I mean, I think it's been fairly clear that the calls for the current homelessness minister, Rushanara Ali, are not only gaining in clamour, but they are endorsed by me. But Melin Medway appears to have been listening to a rather different show. So I'm going to read you this text simply because I sometimes feel that you may not fully grasp the extent of footballification. So stand by for that. It is an example of how someone can listen to the same radio show that you've been listening to and come away with precisely the opposite perspective, OK? I think she's got to go because she's homelessness minister, because she's talked about the exploitation of tenants in the private sector, but crucially because her behaviour is in contravention of what the law will require when the Renters' Rights Bill comes in next year. Do I think she will go? I'm not entirely sure. But do I think we need a little reminder of what the landscape was like not long ago? Do you remember when Jeremy Hunt sort of forgot to tell the authorities that he'd bought 7 or 8 flats in Southampton? Just forgot. An honest mistake. Genuinely, I'm not being sarcastic, but an indication perhaps of what the context looks like. And an extraordinary story from our friend Peter Gagan over at Democracy for Sale about the Cabinet Office under the last government spending £32,000. I'm going to say this slowly because you're not going to believe me, all right? They spent £32,000. This was in the context of Nadeem Zahawi. You'll remember. It's hard to keep track, isn't it? I found it difficult at the time. I find it even harder now. He was sacked as chairman of the Conservative Party because he didn't declare that he was the subject of an ongoing HMRC investigation into his tax affairs. And I think I can remember how that investigation concluded, but I'm not 100% confident, so I won't. It didn't end well for him, let's just say. And he got sacked for not declaring it. So the BBC at that point submitted a Freedom of Information request asking for a blank copy of the Ministerial Interests Form. I'll say that again. They've spent £32,000 trying to keep a blank piece of paper, a blank form, secret. So it's the form you fill in. And what does it look like before you fill it in? Right? So it's not a blank piece of paper, but it is an empty form. Here is the form you fill in to declare your interests. And they spent £32,000 trying to avoid requests to share that blank form. I mean, frankly, extraordinary. The judge didn't buy it at all. She said the Cabinet Office has overstated its case and that given Zahawi's conduct, there was a strong public interest in understanding how these declarations work. That's what they wanted to know. How does it actually work? What's the form he should have filled in? How plausible is it, for example, that the explanation given for not doing it? So in Jeremy Hunt's case, it was plausible that his accountant, and imagine living in a world where you can just forget that you've bought 7 flats. It was plausible that his accountant had forgotten to fill it in. And when presumably the soon to be Chancellor of the actual Exchequer went over his own personal accounts, he too managed to overlook the fact that he'd bought 7 flats in Southampton. That was plausible, but you'd need to see the forms to know how plausible it was. They asked to see the form that Zahawi was supposed to have filled in on the ministerial interest front after it emerged that he'd failed to declare an HMRC investigation into his finances. And the Cabinet Office, presumably at the behest of the then Prime Minister, resisted and charged you £32,000 for the privilege. But that doesn't matter because Keir Starmer's lot are supposed to be doing it better. 0345 606 0973 is the number that you need. Habib is in Newham. Habib, what would you like to say?
Morning, James.
Hello, Habib.
Hi. Look, let me just firstly say she hasn't done anything wrong. Like all the other callers have said, she hasn't done anything wrong. But what she's done is be silly about it because it's a conflict of interest. Now, let me give you an example. It may not be a good one. It's like you're a police inspector, but you've got a side business of running a security company.
Yeah.
I mean, how stupid can you be? Especially the position she holds, and you know, someone like myself, I find it quite upsetting, really, because the homelessness is everywhere and it's increasing, and on top of that, we have a shortage of housing and so on. And if she is going to do that, then she should have taken control of it herself rather than giving it to a third party to manage it for her, so that she could have actually...
Well, she kind of did. She might say that she did. She's not the landlady, except technically that all of the business is handled by agencies, by estate agencies.
Yes, but this is my point. But then she should have dictated how much she was going to charge and so on. She may be on a contract with them as well. They decide, partially to how they operate it, and what they charge and so on. So I don't know how much they
has get. Anyone, and no one has defended her except John in Bridgend, who owns 16 properties.
Well, she should,
and he's a Labour supporter. I mean, this is one of the strangest phone-ins ever, isn't it?
It is.
Everyone is saying she's done nothing wrong. She's done nothing wrong, but she's got to go.
Exactly. But for me, she has to go. It's because of the position she holds.
Yes.
It's as simple as that.
Yes.
You have to practice what you preach. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, you do, don't you? And she might have the most persuasive rationale under the sun for why she's ended up in this situation, but it categorically puts her in a place where she has not practiced what she preaches.
And this is my precise point, and that's where the issue is. It's about being moral about things and being... knowing your surroundings.
Yeah. Is there an argument?
How stupid can you be?
Is there an argument? Well, I'll read you Mel's text out in a minute and you'll probably get an answer to that question. Is there an argument for saying that no homelessness minister should be in the landlording business?
And that is 100%.
Yeah. Unless they're in the, the thing that John in Bridgend described, which is where it is property ownership, but not with the maximisation and prioritisation of profit at every turn. Somebody has to own this stuff, particularly since it was all sold off under Margaret Thatcher and beyond. But if it can be owned by people who aren't trying to squeeze every last penny out of their tenants, that would be infinitely preferable to it being owned by people who are. Habib, beautifully put. Chris has got a brain that is very similar to mine. So Chris has texted in capital letters, Peanut Farm, James, Peanut Farm. You should know why. The more you listen to this programme, the more likely you are to know why. But as we sit here looking at the political landscape and the relationship between politicians and integrity on both sides of the Atlantic, the peanut farm assumes an almost mythical status. 10:56 is the time. Thank you, Habib. So Mel's been listening to the same show as you, where everybody has called for the Labour Homelessness Minister to resign, except John in Bridgend, who has 16 properties, but is a bona fide Labour supporter. And Mel writes, James, no matter how hard you try to downplay it, your left-wing mob are just as bad as the previous government were. You were predictably ferocious at ripping into the Tories for every misdemeanour. I wasn't, actually. I was incredibly even handed and fair. It's just that they were so absolutely awful, it became impossible not to point out their misdemeanors every day. And now it sounds like you're trying to make light of a Labour misdemeanor. That's from Mel in Medway. So she's got to go is making light of something. I would hate to hear what going in hard sounds like, wouldn't you? Maybe the rules are different in Medway, but at least Habib's answer, Habib's question of how stupid can you get, has been answered in spectacular fashion. John's in Leighton Buzzard, or Leighton Buzzard, as estate agents call it. John, what would you like to say?
Well, first thing I'd like to say is Jimmy Carter.
Well played, and, well played. Even the producer didn't get that. She said an American politician whose name I can't remember.
There we go.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And also to say, I've been listening to your show since 2016, and thanks for keeping people like us reasonably sane.
Reasonably, John. Thank you. Yeah. You're very welcome.
Thank you. I think the one thing which I don't think has been mentioned through the show this morning is that we don't know what her ongoing expenses are.
True.
So the reason I mention that is that if, for instance, she was renting out at $3,300, if her total costs, including any mortgage, was, say, $3,500, then I think there is some element of justification in putting the rent up, at least to cover her costs.
Yeah.
If she was making a very decent profit at the previous rent, then I think I would regard that as being, and I say it as a landlord, I would say that as being exploitative. And especially with the Renters' Rights Bill coming in shortly, I think it smells. It really smells, and I think she should go.
But even if she's only covering her costs or not quite covering her costs, she's still a buy-to-let landlord in those circumstances. And the question of whether or not a homelessness minister can or should be a buy-to-let landlord doesn't go away, does it?
No, but I think as you mentioned about your own personal position, you did it on what you would regard on an ethical basis.
Yes, I did. Go me. Hang on, I'm just going to polish my halo again, John.
Hang on.
There we go. Carry on.
round of applause squeak. For James O'Brien.
Thank you very much. Squeak. Keith won't press the button on that.
I think if she should have declared it right at the outset and said, look, this might look a bit bad,
yeah.
But here are all the facts, so this is why I'm doing it. And I think that then you might have stood back. I know there's not a lot of small violins left, but you might have stood back and thought, at least she's come clean and it looks okay.
You're a nice man, but she does have two rental properties.
Well, she could be losing money on both. We don't know.
In which case, I'm not sure I want anywhere near the Treasury. But she's currently homelessness minister. Thank you very much, John. Well, that's bad news. I don't know quite how you spin that one, even if you are Malcolm Tucker. Now, the only person who thinks that Rishanara Ali should not go as homelessness minister over her private and personal property dealings is a bloke in Bridgend who owns 16 properties. And he's furious about the legislation that he already has to deal with in Wales, and which Rishanara Ali would have had to deal with in England had Labour's Renters' Rights Bill kicked in, which it will do next year. So I don't know. I'll tell you what, a lot of the discussion about this issue won't be as deep and as detailed as the one that we've just had. So it depends largely on what happens tomorrow in the newspapers that would attack whatever the weather. But here we are.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, the first migrants have been detained under Britain's new one-in, one-out deal with France. The Home Office says it's prepared to defend itself against any legal challenges and return them to France within weeks. It's not clear how many people are being held. The Shadow Home Secretary, Chris Phillips, says he observed boats making the journey yesterday.
What was clear is that for those two dinghies full of people yesterday, there was no deterrent effect whatsoever, because they knew that under the Labour government's deal, which came into force yesterday, only 6% of people on that dinghy stand to get returned. 94% get to stay in the UK. And if you've got a 94% chance of staying, that's not really a deterrent at all.
Russian officials say they've reached an agreement with the US for a meeting between Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump. The Kremlin has claimed it could take place in the coming days. The White House hasn't commented, but said yesterday a summit on Ukraine could be held very soon. The homelessness minister, Rishanara Ali, is facing criticism for hiking the rent on her property in East London. She reportedly increased the rent by £700 a month after evicting her previous tenants. A spokesperson for Ms. Ali, who owns or part owns three properties in London, says she complied with all legal requirements. The first people have been charged with showing support for Palestine Action after the group was proscribed. Two women and a man were arrested at a protest in central London last month. They are due to face the terrorism charges at Westminster Magistrates Court in September. The Bank of England is widely tipped to cut interest rates in an hour's time. Economists are expecting the base rate, which is currently at 4.25%, to come down by a quarter point. Daniel Mahoney, an economist at Handelsbanken, says there are concerns about a slowdown in the jobs market.
If you look at the number of payrolled employees, for example, they've been falling since the budget last year. So that loosening labour market means that most MPC members will want to cut rates.
In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was down 26 points at 91.37. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 14. LBC weather, most places dry and cloudy, some sunshine and showers in Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 25 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible, and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 3 minutes after 11 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where we turn our attention now from a Labour politician to a Conservative politician. But in some ways, the question remains the same. What do you think about what they have done? I don't think anybody will be calling for Kemi Badenoch's resignation, except perhaps the young lad who appears in the story that you will hear shortly. But it is nonetheless fascinating. And I shall tell you why I think that. Not least because when I arrived at work this morning, Eleanor told me the story of this interview with Kemi Badenoch, in which she revealed that she dobbed someone in for cheating when she was at school. So knowing what I do about her biographical details, she would have been at school in Nigeria at the time, at the age of 14 or 15, because I don't think she became here until she was 16, when you'll remember she did a shift at McDonald's and immediately became working class. And she said to me, Kemi Badenoch's given an interview and she reveals that she dobbed someone in for cheating in an exam and they got expelled from school. And, okay, here's a prize. Can you guess what my... So those were the only details I knew at that moment. Kemi Badenoch's given an interview, at which point anybody hoping to see a Conservative government in power after the next election starts gnashing their teeth furiously and tearing their hair out. But Kemi Badenoch has given an interview and in it she reveals that she dobbed someone in for cheating in an exam and they got expelled from school. So at that point, I filled in some gaps, right? On age and exam status and even perhaps location of exam. And I got it wrong. So that, just set that aside. Those are the facts you've got. Someone cheated. She stood up in the middle of the exam hall and pointed at them and called them out. And he got expelled from school. Did I approve or disapprove of Kemi Badenoch's behaviour? Shall I wait for you to tell me and see what the general feeling is, or is this, even by my standards, far too self-referential and conceited? It's probably too so. Well, what's your reaction? What was your? Do you think I approved or disapproved of what she did? I approved. For two reasons. Number one, I presumed it was what we call a public exam, as in an exam sat by more or less everybody of the same age. So a GCSE or A level or equivalent in another country. I presumed it was a public exam and therefore the act of cheating could be easily perceived as a personal affront by somebody who had either worked hard or who had not worked hard at all and was fully expecting to receive the punishment that they so completely deserved. So Eleanor told me the story and I approved of her behaviour. You don't know me at all. Look at this. 100% disapprove. Jamie says disapproved. Lorna says Kemi's a grass. That totally tracks. That's kind of moving ahead slightly on the next question. Thank goodness Matt knows me. Matt says approve. I would, of course, approved if it was, as I presumed, a public exam. I got some concerns about the lad being expelled, because being expelled from school, depending on your socioeconomic status, can be a life-changing experience and not in a good way. You come from a socioeconomic background like mine, you're probably going to be okay. But you're, you know, coming from a background that is not as comfortable and as privileged as mine, then being expelled from school can be a huge fork in the road, a real sliding doors moment. And then I listened to the clip. And I think I may have changed my mind. So we're going to talk about what she's done and what it tells you about her, the leader of the Conservative Party, a young woman who would, rather a woman who would be your Prime Minister, who aspires to be your Prime Minister. And here is an example of her, both her morality and her personal motivation. And I am absolutely fascinated by it. I'm genuinely fascinated by it. You can't see the degree of glee with which she relates the story. I think that's a fair word to use, but you can perhaps hear it in this clip from an interview with Amol Rajan of the BBC. So just remember, I got told what had happened and found myself quietly approving of what she had done. And then I listened to this. And, well, I think things changed a bit.
I wasn't just the swot in the class. I was the person who would say, that person is copying notes from the other, you know, the other person. I was the tattletale in the class, like, telling, you know, getting people into trouble. Because I even then, I hated cheating, because there I was. You know, I wanted to be first in the class, and I've done all the work. And then there's some people who are copying notes, and so why should they get away with it? And I, you know, so I'd raise up my hand. I remember there was this extraordinary day. I was in, I must have been about 14 or 15. And I said, he's cheating. I stood up in the middle of the exam, and I stood up and said, he's cheating. He's the one that's doing it. And that boy ended up getting expelled. And I didn't get praised for it. And I was a relatively popular kid at school. And people said, why did you do that? Why would you do that? And I said, because he was doing the wrong thing. And someone said, you don't belong here. That you don't know how to behave. You don't belong here. And I've heard that all my life. You don't follow the rules. You don't do what you're supposed to. You're always sticking your head above the parapet. You're too direct. You tell the truth when you don't need to tell the truth, when you should pipe down. And I didn't belong there.
Hang on a second. So you're 14 years old and in the middle of an exam.
14, 15.
Yeah. 14 or 15. Yeah. You see a boy cheating in the middle of an exam, in the middle of an exam hall. You stand up and you snitch on this kid who's cheating, who ends up getting expelled.
Yeah. Yes.
No wonder you're so unpopular back at school. You sound really annoying.
I was. Do you know what? The people who did that sort of thing hated it, but someone did say to me,
it was the right thing to do.
Yeah, that you were the only person who would ever have the guts to do that.
Sorry. Oh. She's also the only person who ever had the guts to hack into Harriet Harman's website, wasn't she, and alter it in what was, I think, at the time, technically a crime. But make of that what you will, slightly different angle on the story. And that, of course, happened before she became an MP. And what I'd really, in fact, I'd really like you to do is just tell me what you think of that story. I'd rather not do a... Well, I've only got 3 or 4 minutes anyway, but sometimes you don't ring me unless I inflict a lengthy diatribe on you first. I find it fascinating, this. I find the fact that my own view changed a bit, listening to her relate the tale, that the sort of glee she took in it and the absolute absence of concern for what happened to the lad. I don't know the Nigerian education system at all, but I don't think that it would have been a public exam at 14 or 15. Does it change your view of her? I'm going to take her at her word. We have no choice but to do so. I don't think you can accuse her, as a couple of texters have already done, of making up the story. But think back. So my view is different. If it had been an A-level or a GCSE, and it had somehow sounded like a reluctant exercise, oh, it falls to me. It falls to me to unsheathe my trusty sword of truth and my battered shield of decency. And I, because no one else is going to call out this lad over there cheating, and I hope that circumstances are taken into account. And if it had been a public exam and she sounded as if she had a scintilla of concern for the cheat, let's be under no bones about it, a cheat. You can add theoretical things. He might have got beaten by his father. If he had not passed the exam, he might have been acting out of terror and fear. Who knows? Certainly not her. But you can just about get your head around the idea of somebody acting out of honesty and integrity and with a degree of reluctance because of the reality, the humanity of the person whose life you were potentially upending if it was a public exam. But I don't think that it was. I mean, we may find out that it was, and I may realise that this is a bit of a mealy-mouthed distinction to make. But if it was just in school, if the only thing you were going to achieve was seeing your name higher than theirs on a piece of paper that got pinned to the notice board at tea time, it's pretty grim, actually, isn't it? And so she can happily break the law when it comes to Harriet Harman's website. She can engage in defences, spirited defences of law breakers like Boris Johnson and presumably Dominic Cummings. There's absolutely no moral compass in play with any Conservative politician who sat idly by while Johnson trashed the country and Truss trashed the economy. But somehow a 14-year-old boy cheating in an exam is an act so egregious that it falls to her, because nobody else would do it, to call him out. I find it distasteful. The glee with which she tells the story. I'm going to play it to you one more time, and then you're going to tell me what you think. That's all. There aren't many politicians in this category, but leader of the opposition is one of them. And telling a story that she clearly thinks paints her in a very good light. And that's the only question I've got for you. Does this story paint Kemi Badenoch in a good light? 0345 6060 973.
I wasn't just the swot in the class. I was the person who would say that person is copying notes from the other person. I was the tattletale in the class, getting people into trouble. Because I hated cheating, because there I was, I wanted to be first in the class, and I've done all the work. And then there's some people who are copying notes, and so why should they get away with it? And so I'd raise up my hand. I remember there was this extraordinary day. I was I must have been about 14 or 15. And I said, he's cheating. I stood up in the middle of the exam, and I stood up and said, he's cheating. He's the one that's doing it. And that boy ended up getting expelled. And I didn't get praised for it. And I was a relatively popular kid at school. And he said, why did you do that? Why would you do that? And I said, because he was doing the wrong thing. And someone said, you don't belong here. That you don't know how to behave. You don't belong here. And I've heard that all my life. You don't follow the rules. You don't do what you're supposed to. You're always sticking your head above the parapet. You're too direct. You tell the truth when you don't need to tell the truth, when you should pipe down. And I didn't belong there.
Hang on a second. So you're 14 years old and in the middle of an exam.
14, 15.
Yeah. 14 or 15. Yeah. You see a boy cheating in the middle of an exam, in the middle of an exam hall. You stand up and you snitch on this kid who's cheating, who ends up getting expelled.
Yeah. Yes.
No wonder you're so unpopular back at school. You sound really annoying.
I was. Do you know what? The people who did that sort of thing hated it, but someone did say to me,
it was the right thing to do.
Yeah, that you were the only person who'd ever have the guts to do that.
Is guts what you need to do that? I'm not sure it is, personally. But I need to be brutally honest with you. Well, not brutally honest. I need to be completely honest with you. When I was told the original detail that she saw someone cheating in an exam and she told a teacher, I thought, good for you. Presuming it was A, a public exam, and B, the tale wouldn't have been told with undisguised joy and glee. But maybe that's me. Maybe that's... They don't always work as phone-ins, because as I say, you need me to give you more Lego. So that's what I do in my introduction. I give you as much Lego as I can so that you can build the most exciting creation, you see. And I'm not giving you much Lego when I say something like, meh, what do you think? But I've given you quite a lot of Lego in terms of background, because you know a lot about her already. And I've told you what I felt and then how it changed when I heard it. And now you've heard it. And I don't think anyone can dispute the fact that she thinks this story paints her in a very positive light. She comes out of this very well. And I simply want to know whether or not she does, whether or not you think she does or not. I'd love to speak to someone who went to school with her in Nigeria, but even my enormous net would be rather optimistically cast, wouldn't it, in those circumstances. We do pretty well on the programme when it comes to people ringing in who are extraordinarily well qualified to comment on any given subject. But I'll tell you now, if you went to school with Kemi Badenoch and you can remember either her or this incident or both, then you're almost certainly guaranteed a Ray Liotta. It's 11:17.
This is LBC.
Come in, everyone ready.
Exciting.
Remembering how to prepare for a road trip is as easy as spelling it. T is for top up, like fuel, oil and screen wash. R is for rest, taking a break every 2 hours. I is for inspect, like your tire pressure and tread. P is for prepare, being prepared for any weather. T-R-I-P. Remember that and you're ready for a safe trip.
Are we ready?
Yes, Mum.
National Highways.
Introducing the Ford Capri. Rewired for the electric age. And now you could win one. Take a test drive in the new all-electric Capri to enter. And you could win the Icon Rewired. Search Win a Ford Capri. Go electric with Ford. to enter, book a test drive online by 31st August and complete by 30th September. T's and C's apply. 25 plus only. For details, see ford.co.uk.
The Seagull says, your IKEA food favorites are now available in Brighton. Meatballs, plant balls, fish and chips. All delicious. Especially the chips. Yum. IKEA Brighton, open 14th of August. IKEA, the wonderful everyday.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
It is 19 minutes after 11. I don't know whether she's having a bad day or not, but if she is having a bad day, it just got worse. YouGov have published polling in the last hour that shows that the British public prefer Jeremy Corbyn to Kemi Badenoch, which no doubt her team will be chewing over while we chew over the question of whether she emerges well from this story that she's clearly told with gleeful intent and in the belief that it makes her look good. It will make her look good to voters. That's the only reason you do interviews, really, in the hope of looking good to voters. And she thinks telling a story about... A lot of you using the word snitch, but that's a pejorative word. I mean, you know, it isn't necessarily a bad thing to do. But anyway, why am I withering on when I said I'd just immediately start canvassing your responses? Indeed, your answers to the question of whether she emerges well from the telling of this tale. Phil's in Beckenham. Phil, what do you reckon?
Well, in my WhatsApp message, I called her a smug snitch. I'll withdraw snitch in view of what you said.
It's an unalloyed negative, isn't it? If you'd been a victim of crime and someone dobbed in the culprit, you wouldn't call them a snitch, would you?
No, but you put your finger on the situation. She wasn't a victim. She was trying to make herself look good, and that was all she was intent upon. Just like in Prime Minister's questions, when she asks a decent question, Keir Starmer answers it, and she asks it again because she didn't listen in the first place. She was so pleased with herself for what she said, she goes deaf. She's so self-centred, it's beyond belief.
But you felt this before the latest episode, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, I'm biased.
No, nothing wrong with that. I like that. It doesn't mean you're wrong. So if you did what I did this morning, when you were simply told that a politician witnessed someone cheating in an exam and told the authorities, your gut reaction would be much warmer, I think.
Well, my instinctive reaction would be, it's not my business. I wouldn't interfere. I might not like it. And it might colour my view of that. It might colour my view of that person who was cheating in the future. But I hadn't thought of that.
So the idea. So she's working on the premise that everybody would have done the same, but they didn't have the guts.
Well, I hadn't thought of it exactly that way. But yeah, you're right.
And it's not about guts, in your view. It's about
It's about self-aggrandisement.
No one congratulated me, she said, didn't she? Why have you done it? Oh, for honesty and integrity and truth. Oh, what was your first thought? No one congratulated me! Me! Thank you, Phil. I'd love to track down the poor lad who got snitched on, a few of you are suggesting, and using the word that you've sent to me, AP, not using the word that I have just discouraged Phil from using himself. Michelle's in Horsham. Michelle, what do you think?
Hi, James.
Hello, Michelle.
Yeah, I wanted to say that I don't think the clip makes Kemi sound good at all. I'm on the fence about whether what she did was the right thing or not, but it makes her sound bad. It makes her sound even less likable to most people. And I think what you're hearing as glee in her voice, I think, is her attempting to make herself sound, make light of it and make it sound as if it was... It was done in good intentions, but I don't think it was. But the biggest point I wanted to make is that I think it's yet another means of her making an underhand dig at Nigeria. Gosh. When she keeps... Because she kept repeating, I didn't belong there. I didn't belong there. I think what I'm implying from that is that most people in Nigeria cheat and don't tell the truth unless they absolutely have to. But I was different and I was brave enough to stand up, and that's how come I ended up in the UK by the time I was 16. That's what I took from it.
I hadn't picked up on it. Are you of Nigerian heritage yourself?
I am.
So James, you would be sensitive to that then, in a way that I was not.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I could be wrong, but
I don't see how you can be wrong. I mean, I didn't belong there. Where? In school? Mm. In the exam hall? In a room where people don't like snitches? But I mean, what does she mean by that? And you're not alone. I think it was the vice president of Nigeria who had a pop at her relatively recently for constantly denigrating the country.
A lot of Nigerians are just sick of it. And I just think it's really sad and pathetic. When you compare her to Rishi Sunak, how many, you know, I'm not a conservative voter at all, but, you know, how many times did he make negative comments about his country? I just think it's just really, really sad.
Oh, his parents' country.
Yes, his parents' country. Yeah. I mean, you know, speaking as a Nigerian, I was born here, and I'm British, and I'm very proud and happy to have been British and educated here and all the rest of it. But
why put the boot in? I mean, she's gone further recently, hasn't she? And said that she doesn't identify as Nigerian anymore. Is that not her right? Is that not her prerogative? Or does she damage all of you when she speaks in this way?
I think she does. Mm. She does.
I mean, it's a hard to dispute angle when you hear it in context, actually. I don't belong here. She'd have to tell us where. Where don't you belong? In a school where no one else calls out a cheat. Would you have done it? What would you have done? Imagine it was me sitting over there. You've just noticed that I've got half of Virgil's Aeneid written up my arm.
No, I wouldn't have called you out. I wouldn't have told a teacher. I may have told friends afterwards. I would have said, you know, you wouldn't believe what I saw James doing. Or, you know, but I wouldn't have stood up in the hall. No, I just wouldn't have.
Yeah, I don't think I would have done either. Maybe in an A level, but certainly not just in a school exam. And that is an angle that perhaps you need to be a little bit more sensitive to the Nigerian question to have picked up on. I won't patronise you, Michelle, by reminding you that I have Nigerian cousins, and so at least on their behalf, I should have been a little bit more sensitive to that part of the story as well. Aldo is in Edinburgh. Aldo, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. The last lady that just spoke there, I think she typified certainly my point of view and what I would suspect would be most other people's point of view, that no one else would want to stick someone in so badly.
Well, she clearly thinks everybody else wanted to, but somehow lacked the extraordinary courage and resolve that she possesses that enabled her to stick her hand up.
I'm not so sure. From my perspective, I would probably look, as I did 40, 50 years ago, look on at the people, knowing that I wasn't too good myself, perhaps with a bit of envy, and to the point of the next exam, or at some point during one of the exams, that I did go in with answers written on the back of my hand, or the inside of my hand. So, you know, it certainly wouldn't be something that I would want to snitch, grass, or tell a teacher on, especially, and this is my major concern about Kenny Badenoch, and the glee that she had was a complete lack of empathy for the poor kid that got expelled, knowing that there would probably have been serious consequences for that kid, and for her to recount, especially after knowing that he was expelled with such glee, I find that despicable.
And it does come across that, and I, you know, context is everything. I've watched it as well as listened to it a couple of times, and I don't think anyone can really dispute the use of the word glee.
Yeah, no, but without a shadow of a doubt, you know, I wanted to be first in the class to the point that anything that she would do, you know, she would do anything to, you know, stop anybody achieving, you know, being first or, you know, being better than her. I find that, you know, there's no empathy, you know.
Yeah, and also,
many other kids would do the same.
Well, that's the point, isn't it? And also, I mean, exams are slightly different, and I don't know why I'm clinging to this note, this, especially if they're public line. But for most of us at school, it was us versus them, wasn't it? It was teachers versus pupils. Pupils stick together. Pupils stick together.
Exactly. You know, the point, and perhaps you might have looked with a wee bit of envy at the people thinking they're going to get a better mark because they're cheating a wee bit. And then you think, you know, but would you go back? You know, like I said, the last lady was right. You would go back and you would tell your friends.
Yeah.
You wouldn't, not in a million years.
Well, you might even quietly, hey, you've nailed something there. You might even quietly tell a teacher if you really felt strongly about it. Well, but to stand up and make an absolute public spectacle of yourself in expectation, as she concedes, of being, garlanded and congratulated. That's why she remains a truly fascinating human being, let alone politician. I think that if the question YouGov asked this morning was who are you more fascinated by, Kemi Badenoch or Jeremy Corbyn, then Kemi Badenoch would have romped home. But that wasn't the question I asked. The question was, who do you think would make a better prime minister? And unfortunately, she does less well than the fellow who's already had two bites of that particular cherry. Well, she hasn't had any. Aldo, thank you. It's coming up to 29 minutes after 11. 03456060973 is the number you need, although a little hard to get through at the moment. The crux of this question really lies in the difference between the detail and the context, doesn't it? Because I wonder, I wish we could have found some way of testing what the reaction was to the story when you knew very little about it. I have to say, a politician has revealed that they saw someone cheating in an exam at school and they reported him. Does that make you think more or less of the politician? And I think the answer would be very different. I think the ratio would be very different to me saying, here's some footage of Kemi Badenoch boasting about busting someone for cheating at school. What do you think of her? I think the approval level has come plummeting down and the disapproval level has gone rocketing up. And that is why she is potentially a truly disastrous party leader. Because it's not what she's done that is the problem here. It is, forgive me, it's kind of who she is that is the problem. So you can tell the story with no detail and find yourself either ambivalent or approving or mildly disapproving. You hear her tell the story and your disapproval levels go through the roof, which is an absolute disaster when it comes to comms, public image and personal perceptions. That's why this story is perhaps, well, it's why it's being very widely reported and it's been a subject to some fascination for us this morning and will continue to be so after the very latest headlines with Thomas Watts.
The first migrants have been detained under a new one-in, one-out deal after crossing the English Channel. They were held by Border Force yesterday and, according to the Home Office, could be returned to France within weeks. The Kremlin says it's agreed with the US that Vladimir Putin will meet Donald Trump. A Russian official has claimed it could take place in the coming days. Another cut to interest rates is expected from the Bank of England in half an hour's time. Most analysts are predicting a quarter point cut to 4%. LBC weather, sunshine and showers across Scotland and Northern Ireland, mostly dry and cloudy elsewhere, a high of 25 degrees.
This is LBC.
Huh. Have you ever wondered what a sandwich sounds like? Not much to it, is there? Unless, of course, it's a Walker's sandwich. Mmm, that is good. Now that's what a sarnie should sound like. Go all crisp in with Walker's. Delicious.
With over 50 years experience at Fidelity, we believe there's a difference between investing and being invested. Investing is having access to guidance, tools and expert insights. Being invested means feeling confident about your future. Investing is choosing from a wealth of investment options. Being invested means focusing on your long-term goals. For ISAs, pensions or advice, be truly invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
When you go abroad, everyone knows the best way to make yourself understood is to say everything in English, but louder.
Four beers, please, garçon!
Just like when you amplify your advertising with radio. 40 million listeners every week get the message. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
At TfL, we're helping to make bus journeys greener. Our entire bus fleet is 100% low or zero emission at the tailpipe, including those for our Superloop routes, helping improve air quality for all. And we'll have a fully zero emission fleet by 2034. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Body pain might not sound like this.
Oh.
Or this.
Oh.
But it might sound like this.
I'm fine.
Hiding your body pain behind a smile? Let us help. With up to 12 hours of uninterrupted muscle and joint pain relief. Voltarol, the joy of movement. Voltarol Joint and Back Pain Relief 2.3% gel contains diclofenac diethylammonium. Always read the label.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It is 11:33. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Mystery Hour. On the way at 12. Not a lot of mystery surrounding the conversation currently under discussion. As Caroline reminds us, we are talking about the woman who happily never ever makes gaffes. She never has to apologise, apart from that time she wrote to Harriet Harman after illegally hacking her website and boasting about it in an interview. She never makes gaffes. She never has to apologise for anything. Never puts her foot in her mouth, apart perhaps from that time she claimed that she became working class when she worked her first shift in McDonald's. But she has told a story about dobbing someone in at her school for cheating, and so far, and this might be an instance of footballification or bias, but don't forget, it might not. As that earlier caller said, I am biased, but it doesn't mean I'm wrong. No one is on her side. Everybody has emerged, if you like, of the view that she emerges from this story much worse than she went into it. And it's not because of the facts or the details. It's because of the telling. So one more quick credit for the BBC and the interviewer in this case, Amal Rajan. And then last listen to, before we talk to Jack in Hackney and Danny in Lewisham, the last listen to how she tells the story. There's a lesson here for everybody. How often do we talk about needing a story? It's why the post office scandal didn't really ignite in the public consciousness until it was turned into an ITV drama. Stories reach parts. That documentaries and details cannot reach. And this is proof of the opposite pudding. Sometimes telling a story can make the teller look much worse than a simple relation of the facts would do. So the facts are fairly straightforward and not difficult to approve of. The telling of the facts, well, it's pretty close to hideous.
I wasn't just the swot in the class. I was the person who would say that person is copying notes from the other person. I was the tattletale in the class, getting people into trouble. Because I hated cheating, because there I was. You know, I wanted to be first in the class, and I've done all the work. And then there's some people who are copying notes, and so why should they get away with it? And so I'd raise up my hand. I remember there was this extraordinary day. I was in, I must have been about 14 or 15. And I said, he's cheating. I stood up in the middle of the exam, and I stood up and said, he's cheating. He's the one that's doing it. And that boy ended up getting expelled. And I didn't get praised for it. And I was a relatively popular kid at school. And he said, why did you do that? Why would you do that? And I said, because he was doing the wrong thing. And someone said, you don't belong here. That you don't know how to behave. You don't belong here. And I've heard that all my life. You don't follow the rules. You don't do what you're supposed to. You're always sticking your head above the parapet. You're too direct. You tell the truth when you don't need to tell the truth, when you should pipe down. And I didn't belong there.
Hang on a second. So you're 14 years old and in the middle of an exam.
14, 15.
Yeah. 14 or 15. Yeah. You see a boy cheating in the middle of an exam, in the middle of an exam hall. You stand up and you snitch on this kid who's cheating, who ends up getting expelled.
Yeah. Yes.
No wonder you're so unpopular back at school. You sound really annoying.
I was. Do you know what? The people who did that sort of thing hated it, but someone did say to me,
it was the right thing to do.
Yeah, that you were the only person who'd ever have the guts to do that.
The more you listen to it, the more you're tempted to end the little clip by saying, oh, bless. Michelle in Horsham's point about her denigrating Nigeria, possibly undermined slightly by the claim that people have been telling her entire life, wherever she was living at the time, that she doesn't belong here. But there's so much other stuff to unpick there. None of it, I would argue, particularly pretty. Lisa is in Luton. Lisa, what do you reckon?
I'm actually... good morning.
Hello.
I think this shows her in a very good light.
Oh,
and
good.
I am not a Badenoch fan. I'm actually a Corbyn fan, but that's for our next conversation. I remember being taught at a very young age that cheating was wrong, and I think that the people saying, well, they were cheating in this area, or they were cheating, or it wasn't in a public exam, or it was, It's just excuses. And I think the person who comes out badly in that interview is the journalist who straight away says, you snitch.
Yeah, it's a funny word, snitch. Snitches get stitches is the phrase that an awful lot of people think of immediately. And that is obviously designed to discourage people from doing the truth. And also, you know, no one likes a grass is a fairly popular figure of speech as well. But you would do if it was you that had been the victim of the crime. Problem is, there's no crime here and no victim.
Well, the same people will be on your radio station complaining about benefit cheats, complaining about people doing something wrong.
Well, you might have got my show mixed up. I think you might have got my show mixed up with someone else's there, but that's okay.
I listen to your show a lot.
Okay.
I like to see how the other half lives.
Yes.
And it's not about Nigeria with Temi Badenoch. When she's saying she doesn't belong, I think she's talking about the Westminster bubble and the media. They hate Temi. She doesn't belong. She doesn't play the game of popularity. And that was clear from very early on that they don't like her. She doesn't do as many interviews as they would like. You know, she's not part of that little networking thing.
And that's so what she's got. She that's what she's got in common with Jeremy Corbyn. I can see why you have warmth towards both of them now. I hadn't thought of it like that.
I wouldn't say that at all. I think maybe your area feel that way about Corbyn, but I think Corbyn is very popular amongst those of, well, we could talk about the figures and...
I'm talking about the idea that someone is being unfairly maligned by the mainstream media and is a thorn in the side of the establishment who don't give them the respect that they deserve. I'm only saying back to you what you said to me. They both fit into that category in your view.
No.
Oh, sorry, I misunderstood you.
I understand.
Because what you said is that she is, you know, maligned by the mainstream media and attacked, and that's what Jeremy Corbyn fans always say about Jeremy Corbyn.
Yeah, so I understand the parallel that you are desperate to draw here, but you do draw the parallel if it makes you...
what parallel?
If it suits... Are we going to go back to what we're talking about? You are clearly wanting to draw a parallel between liking Jeremy Corbyn and liking Temi Badenoch.
But you
which
do.
I understand.
But you do.
I didn't say I like Temi Badenoch. I said...
Well, you like what she's done in this case. And you like what it says about her.
James.
Lisa.
LBC... You crack me up with this university debating club level of trying to corner people and just saying what you want.
I do that quite a lot, but I promise you I'm not doing it now.
Right, so let me just be clear. I did come on and I said I am not a Temi Badenoch fan.
Right.
But in answer to your call, I said, actually, this clip puts her in a better light.
Then you went off on quite
a
lengthy...
I'm still not a fan.
Then you went on quite a lengthy... explanation of how you felt she was more sinned against than sinning by, for example, the mainstream, the Westminster establishment, I think you said, didn't you? And the mainstream media. I was just trying to make conversation. I'm sorry I've upset you.
Oh, I'm not upset, James.
Well, I'm sorry, I haven't upset you, though.
I'm sorry, I haven't upset you.
In a sentence, what is your contribution to this conversation?
I've already made, I think, a valued contribution.
So I completely agree, but sometimes it's helpful to do a little summary at the end.
It would be lovely to... you asked for a sentence and then you interrupted, James.
Yep.
I think that you have, for the past almost hour, said that everybody was on one side. So I wanted to phone in and say, I'm not a fan, but actually to hear someone saying, no, I stood up, and I publicly, you seem to be thinking that it would be better if she snuck to the teacher and said, oh, miss, so-and-so did this. What's wrong with, in this age where we've got genocides, where we've got children starving, what's wrong with people standing up and saying, do you know what, that's wrong?
I'm not going to lie to you. I didn't think this would be a phone-in that someone would bring the genocide in Gaza into, but here we are. And yes, you're absolutely right. I mean, the parallels are obvious. Jack's in Hackney. Jack, what would you like to say?
I don't support anything about what she said in this story, and I think it makes her look absolutely terrible.
As I was saying to your producer before I came on, in my opinion, she failed, like, to judge the public opinion again. And it's a bit of a characteristic of hers. And this isn't even... I'm very much not a Tory. And I absolutely, with everything in my being, I can't stand Kemi Badenoch. But she continuously just failed to judge the public test. If you walked into a pub and you said...
If I walk into a pub, do I immediately become working class?
Well, only if you worked at McDonald's.
Okay, carry on.
But, if you walked into a pub and you said, yeah, well, when I was 14, I grasped on somebody and I made sure that did it. Nobody is going to get up and be like, yeah.
Well, Lisa is. And I'm not being unkind. I've upset her. Well, I haven't upset her. But Lisa in Luton would actually be well done. And so just pointing out, you might not be in the same pub, but if you were, she would say, well done. Let me buy you a Aperol Spritz.
Well, in that case, you look around the pub and you've got one person who claps for you slowly by themselves, and then you got everyone else looking at you like, what did you just do? Like, but
I think you're right. It is, you know, you're just trying to imagine the circumstances in which you tell the story about the time you got a kid expelled for cheating an exam, and you literally say, I can't understand why nobody applauded me.
Yeah, that's another part of this, actually, that I want to really raised, which is that if it was really about doing right and wrong, why did she say I didn't get the praise?
Yeah.
Because she wanted the praise from the person in power, and she wanted to flex her power on other people. And I've got one more big point that really stings with me. If she is proudly telling the world about how much she grasped on people in her own schooling environment, well, if something comes out that she did not bring to our attention as the public, as leader of the Tories, it again raises the question of why is it that you seem to be so very willing to grasp on people and take pride in it, but you're not willing to talk about what's going on in your own party? And this is Nigeria we're talking about. Do you know the level of corporal punishment that boy would have faced?
No, I don't.
For cheating? I'll tell you this right now.
Go on.
You have quite strong... and I respect you quite a lot for talking about it.
Yeah.
Opinions about how you were corporally punished at boarding school.
I do.
Even in your day, James, if you got beaten like you get beaten in Nigeria, that's not funny.
Okay.
That's not funny at all. Because that boy would have been beaten at school, and he would have been beaten at home. And whatever school fees that his parents would have put together are gone. And this isn't Britain. That boy doesn't come out and have a social safety net or a second school to go to. That boy could, for all we know, he could have been fine, or he could have been in abject poverty. But I think that's the heart of why it particularly doesn't resonate well with Black Brits or with anybody, which is the action does not match the punishment.
And that I think probably puts the boot into my public exam point as well. The idea that she might have had I don't have the knowledge that you have of the sort of West African education system. That the idea that the boy, I did say it at the outset, you don't know what's happened to the boy. He could have gone home and got battered by his dad, but I didn't make that as a Nigerian observation. I would have made the same observation about somebody growing up in Kidderminster at the time. But yeah, you're right. And that does sound sour. That sours what was previously a relatively light-hearted conversation, albeit occasionally a slightly surreal one, but a relatively light-hearted conversation does actually assume a slightly different dimension. And the messages from people saying, I wish I could find out what had happened to the boy, assume a different resonance as well that perhaps you intended when you sent them in, but which I had missed until Jack's call. Thank you, mate. Thank you, Jack. 11:46 is the time.
LBC, coming up tomorrow morning on Nick Ferrari at Breakfast. A question that has bedeviled every police force in the country, how to tackle knife crime.
The West Midlands, who've seen a 25% decrease in knife robbery. What they've been using, drones, dogs.
High praise for West Midlands Police, which is also clamping down on the menace of e-bikes. LBC went on a special operation. And what of the ethnicity of suspects? Home Secretary Yvette Cooper.
What we'd want to do is to change the guidance and to make sure that there is greater transparency.
Much to discuss with Craig Guildford, the Chief Constable of West Midlands Police, when he joins me tomorrow morning from 7.
Nick Ferrari at Breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on your radio, on Global Player, and the new LBC app.
Who's a good human?
Jenny is, because Jenny will always do what's best for Bertie, her bestie Bassett. So if Bertie needs to go and wee, that's what they're going to do. Even if it is 3 a.m. and it's raining cat lots. That's why she also chooses Butternut Box for Bertie's meals. Freshly prepared, served straight from the fridge, and conveniently delivered right to your door. At a time that suits you for once. Hey, Jenny. Ready to join thousands of good humans? Go to butternutbox.com to fetch 25% off your first box with code GOODHUMAN.
I'm telling you, raise taxes, that's how.
Cut spending, less waste, more sense.
Move north, get more for your money.
Until winter hits your heating bill.
Fair.
But 9.13% fixed annual return with Cufflink. We all agree that's strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's hard to ignore.
Cufflink. Auto-invest, property-backed from £500. Hard not to agree. Visit cufflink.com. That's K-U-F-L-I-N-K. Your capital is at risk. Tax rules apply to auto-invest and may be subject to change. Cufflink is authorised and regulated by the FCA. Visit cufflink.com for full T's and C's.
At TfL, we're making tube journeys faster in the future with signalling improvements underway on the Circle, District, Hammersmith and City and Metropolitan lines. And there's also the Elizabeth line already giving you fast journeys across central London. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Elizabeth Line is fast compared to other TfL modes. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Make the O2 your playground this summer. Test your football skills at Toka Social. Take to the skies at iFly indoor skydiving. Or challenge your friends at Boom Battle Bar. Let the kids burn off energy at Oxygen Active Play. Perfect your game at Paddle Social Club. Or test your reflexes in the world of Activate. There's something for everyone at the O2. Feeling hungry? Choose from over 30 bars and restaurants and discover flavors from around the world. Search Do More at the O2 to start planning your perfect day.
What makes match day? You know Maggie's cafe is the vibe.
Mate, Pie King all day, every day.
Mark, the cafe, bigger fan than we are.
Banging out some Not the Top 20 on the way to the game.
It's a great podcast.
All the expert pundits down a dog and duck.
Oh, Kebab Palace. He gets the chili garlic ratio spot on.
Match Day is about more than just the game. It's an experience shared with local businesses at the heart of every EFL club and community. That's why we're proud to support the businesses behind the badge. Sage, official accounting software partner of the EFL.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60973.
10 to 12 is the time. Two texts, both knocking at the same door, but in slightly different ways. James writes, I may be wrong. It wouldn't be the first time. You and me both, James. But I think this will be Kemi's I ran through a field of wheat moment. And Stu writes, James, I love you, but I'm going to stick my neck on the line here. You won't find anyone else that remembers this incident happening, because it didn't. Your first mistake was believing her. Did you also believe that the worst thing Theresa May ever did was run through a field of wheat? And many, many more of you citing Theresa May's field of wheat, whether it was apocryphal or not. For the record, Stu, I don't think she did make that up. I don't think Theresa May did make that up. I honestly, and I think you're both right to cite it, but not necessarily for the reasons that you thought. I also think it's plausible that running through a field of wheat as a little girl was, in Theresa May's mind, the worst thing that she'd ever done. I'm putting Nick Timothy in charge of immigration policies at the Home Office would have been a little bit higher for me, but hey-ho, we're all different. A hostile environment and those horrible vans that were driving around the place at one point, but I don't know whether she takes personal responsibility for that or not. And it made you warm towards Theresa May. You're going to laugh at me now, aren't you? Because a little bit of me warms ever so slightly to Kemi Badenoch at this point in the conversation. It's why, although it's a slightly patronising word to use, for the record, I use it with men as well as with women. You know I do. I think we used it a lot with Steve Baker when he revealed his fast catamaran sailing place. You go, oh, bless. So you come off the back of that clip and you're sort of watching somebody so completely out of touch with what almost everybody else is feeling that you muster up some sympathy for them. Nowhere near as much sympathy or empathy that I have after Jack's call for the lad who actually got expelled from school. But when Theresa May described that, you sort of thought, that's almost sweet. And she subsequently expressed regret for using the term hostile environment, but she hasn't necessarily chalked it up as the worst thing she ever did when compared to running through a field of wheat. But this is the point about stories. I think it was Bill Deeds. I probably misremembered. But I remember when I was starting my career in journalism, I was still working in menswear. And I was beginning to get shifts on the diaries or the gossip columns, as they're more popularly known. And I complained to my dad, to my late dad, that this wasn't necessarily the sort of journalism that I wanted to be doing. And he told me that it would probably Bill Deeds continued to contribute stories to the diary on the Daily Telegraph, even after he became a cabinet minister, I think in Harold Macmillan's government. And he believed that one good anecdote could tell you more about a person than three volumes of biography. That's why stories like this are interesting. This is a brilliant anecdote about her, and she thinks it's a brilliant anecdote to tell about herself. And between those two poles lies the fascination with this story, because it's an appalling anecdote to tell about yourself and a fascinating anecdote through which to examine her. And the same is true of Theresa May. So when Theresa May said that about Wheatfields, you could see 12-year-old Theresa May. You could see a schoolgirl who didn't even know what trouble was. A schoolgirl who was so polite and obedient and well-mannered that she would never have got into trouble. And when pushed to ask what the worst thing she'd ever done was, her genuine response was, "Oh, we once ran through a farmer's wheat field," because that probably was the naughtiest thing she'd ever done. And that's a fascinating anecdote as well, for a whole heap of different reasons. But there it is. That's why Kemi Badenoch is on an absolute hiding to nothing with this. Not for the detail necessarily, although plenty of you were very unhappy about that, but for the glee and the absolute absence of interest or empathy in what would have happened to that young boy after he was expelled from school for cheating in an exam. And hey, maybe he's gone on to be a FTSE 100 chief executive or anything. But, you know, as Jack reminded us, there is a strong likelihood that he would have had all manner of punishments visited upon him for that offence. Pauline's in Glasgow. Pauline, what would you like to say?
Hi, James.
Hello, Pauline.
First time caller, and I'm extremely nervous.
It's only me.
I'm coming from it. I hadn't actually thought that it might not be true.
No, we're working on the presumption that it is, because otherwise, you know, we'll never talk about anything.
Even if it isn't true, the fact still remains. Her story, she believes, portrays it in a good light.
Yes, that's the point,
and
isn't it?
I feel that when you said that you had, when you first heard it, and that she told a teacher, you had some sort of empathy for her.
Yes.
As an exam invigilator for many years, I'm retired, but I did invigilate exams. And I feel for the other children.
Yes.
Because her standing up and proclaiming in her knowledge that she was so superior to all these other children and the teachers, that she knew this boy was cheating, would have disrupted not just the boy, but the whole exam itself.
I hadn't thought
because
of that.
Every child would have stopped in their tracks. Now, if she had said to the teacher, called the teacher over and said, "I think this boy's cheating," then it could have been dealt with in the exam, and the boy maybe would have been taken out and so on. But her standing up probably ruined that exam. And she felt she was so superior to all those children that she had the right, and the teachers, the right to stand up and disrupt the exam.
That does come across, actually. And I mean, if there were any doubt about that, and we can't prove it conclusively, then the complaint that nobody congratulated her or applauded her probably clinches it for any undecideds on that use of the word superiority. An extraordinary sense of self importance.
Self.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And that was just my take on it.
I hadn't thought of it from an invigilator's perspective, but yeah, I mean, that's the last thing you want, is someone jumping up and down and kind of disrupting the entire exam hall for absolutely everybody.
Because not only for those concerned, but that everybody would have returned. She would have, obviously she felt that she had the right to lord it over not only the students and to shut the exam. Personally, I would have taken her out and the boy out. And
of course,
tried to set
to get everybody else to calm down and crack on and crack on with their
exam. And that could have affected their exam results. So, you know, the exam that they were doing.
You're right.
It just shows how self-centred that she is.
Perfect call, for especially on the back of what I was just trying to explain about the power of anecdotes and the importance sometimes of little windows into personalities as opposed to the more carefully cultivated public images that are presented. And there is a parallel between two Tory leaders there, between Theresa May and Kemi Badenoch, who both shared a childhood anecdote in the hope, presumably, of either avoiding embarrassment or engendering admiration, and two completely different landings, two completely different experiences. Pauline, thank you. I just a message to the person who said they could hear your clock ticking in the background. It sounded more to me like an indicator from someone who had kindly pulled over in order to contribute to the programme. That's the kind of radio we make here. Kind of radio that makes you so keen to contribute that you'll pull your car over into a lay-by and hit the numbers. Thank you, Pauline. Last word on this to Dan, who's in Stockwell. What's it going to be, Dan?
Well, one, I think Theresa May's husband did walk away with a knighthood, didn't he? So
yes.
He's done all right. And I think it's a conservative mindset. They attract that. I thought of Robert Sendrick when you spoke
about
that. Honest Bob. Sarah
Vaders. Yes.
Yeah. And I think what she was doing was punishing someone for being at a disadvantage.
He was cheating, mate.
He was cheating. If it was a prince, maybe if it was Boris, then I wonder what she would have done then.
She seems to have looked the other way an awful lot of the time when she was in politics. But before she was in politics, she... Yeah, you're right. Cultivated an image as a great moral arbiter, a great moral compass. Thank you, Dan. You've taken me right up to the wire. It's almost like you timed it to perfection. 5 years, apparently, that hacking of Harriet Harman's website in 2008, according to some reports, that very act that she confessed to would have carried a jail sentence of up to 5 years at the time. But I suppose it knocks Theresa May into a cocked hat if that is the naughtiest thing you've ever done. And a lot of you are picking up on the laughter in the telling of the story as the proof of the pudding that many callers have examined. But anyway, that's it. It's 12 noon. It's Thursday. It's Mystery Hour. I've got some exciting news for you as well regarding Mystery Hour developments. But the hour itself, the feature itself, will remain exactly the same. The number you need, ditto, remains exactly the same.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midday, the first migrants have been detained under a new one-in, one-out deal after crossing the English Channel. They were held by Border Force yesterday and could be returned to France within weeks in exchange for asylum seekers with ties to Britain. The Home Office hasn't revealed how many are being detained. Steve Smith from the campaign group Care for Calais says the deal will have a negligible impact.
The numbers involved, we understand, are microscopically small. Probably about 2 weeks ago, we were talking around 50 per week being sent back. And the French newspaper Le Monde estimated that at 6%. So there's a 6 in 100 chance that you'll be sent back.
A Kremlin aide says a venue has been agreed for a meeting between Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin. The talks could take place in the coming days, but Russian officials have played down the prospect of any Ukrainian involvement. The White House hasn't commented, but said yesterday a summit could be held very soon. The homelessness minister, Reshanara Ali, is facing calls to resign over her handling of a rental property. She reportedly evicted her tenants before increasing the rent of the house in East London by £700 to £4,000 a month. A spokesperson for Ms. Ali says she complied with all relevant legal requirements. Two women and a man have become the first people to be charged with supporting Palestine Action. We understand more than 200 arrests have been made since the group was proscribed under terror laws at the start of July. The Met Police says it's ready to deal with planned demonstrations this weekend. Assistant Commissioner Matt Twist has been speaking to LBC.
We've got an experienced command team, and as we've discussed several times before about public order, what's really important is the police have to deal with things as they find them. We also have to enforce the law as it is, not as others may wish it to be. So there's a lot of plans going in now to deal with if people do turn up and show support for a prescribed organisation, then the police will respond appropriately.
In the last few minutes, the Bank of England has cut the base rate by a quarter point to 4%. Economists had been expecting that decision. It is the fifth reduction since August last year, when rates started coming down from a peak of 5.25%. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading at 91.36. That is down 27. The pound buys $1.34 and a euro 14. LBC weather this afternoon, sunshine and showers in Scotland and Northern Ireland, mostly dry and cloudy elsewhere. A high of 25 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
With over 50 years' experience at Fidelity, we believe there's a difference between investing and being invested. Investing is having access to guidance, tools and expert insights. Being invested means feeling confident about your future. Investing is choosing from a wealth of investment options. Being invested means focusing on your long-term goals. For ISAs, pensions or advice, be truly invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after 12. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where Mystery Hour is once again upon us. Your weekly opportunity to achieve the sort of satisfaction not ordinarily available anywhere else on your radio dial. The way it works is very straightforward. If you're new to it, I'd like you to trust me for a moment when I tell you that you're in for a bit of a treat. You will at least smile. In fact, I would go so far as to guarantee that you will laugh out loud at least once between now and 1 o'clock today. And that's not all. You will also know more by 1 o'clock today than you do now. It may not be knowledge that proves in any way useful to you, or even knowledge that you can recall by 1:10 this afternoon. But between now and 1 o'clock, you will accrue new knowledge. And as if that weren't enough, my favourite contribution of the hour will receive a brand spanking new Mystery Hour board game. Well, when I say brand spanking new, I mean it's brand spanking new to you. But it's the same Mystery Hour board game that has been a prize on this feature and a treasured possession of many, many people for a few years now, as before. However, before the end of this year, there is likely to be a new Mystery Hour game. The sort of the same game, but with entirely new questions and answers and in an exciting new travel format, of which more later. If you want to find out more about the game in its current form, mysteryhour.co.uk is the place to go. If you want to consult the full T's and C's, or terms and conditions, for the competition that I run every Thursday, for which, of course, the prize is a Mystery Hour ball game, then you can go to lbc.co.uk. 5 minutes after 12 is the time. Hit the numbers now, you will get through. So it's a question, a riddle, an enigma, anything that you are puzzled by or have been thinking of and found yourself fairly confident that there must be an answer to that question, but you're dashed if you can work out what it is. So I'll ring in and someone else will tell you. That's the plan. And of course, you can work out the next bit. If you hear somebody else ask a question to which you know the answer, then the song remains the same. You ring in and provide it, 0345 6060973. If we are persuaded by both your answer and your qualifications... See, I can't remember... Then you'll get a round of applause. I can't remember the bit that the premise of the game is to choose the right answer from among wrong answers, which means that back in the day, we must have let on more wrong answers than we do now. The format of the phone-in has changed and the format of the game has not. Used to have to go definitive, and that's why I'd ask what your qualifications were. I guess, as producers have changed over the years, it became harder and harder to explain why you might put through wrong answers. And they work so hard. Today, Rebecca and Eleanor never work harder in a radio studio than they do between 12 and 1 on a Thursday, and they work pretty hard the rest of the time. But I think that, I don't know, can we ever bring that back? Can we ever get back to the wrong answers? Because that was really funny. Or do you feel that the game has evolved actually for the better? So the game, as in the thing that you can buy, works brilliantly with wrong answers in it. The radio phone-in, which used to have wrong answers in it, which is why we had the whole business about going definitive, maybe works better without the wrong answers in it. I don't know. I just hadn't clocked that yesterday till I was with the lads who are in charge of the game, and they were talking about why the wrong answers can be so absolutely hilarious sometimes. And on the new version. Some of them, I mean, are proper, proper funny. Guaranteed laugh-out-loud moments coming out of your ears. 12.07 is the time. Shall we crack on? I think we should. Richard is in Croydon. Richard, question or answer?
Hi, James. First of all, pleasure to speak to you.
Likewise. Thanks.
First time actually ringing in, and I've kind of developed a few questions, but this one is top of my list.
Go, let's do it.
Relative to its size, what is the loudest animal? So if we were all made the same size, smallest insects to the largest animals, if we were all the same size, what would be the loudest?
I love that. What do you reckon?
Well, the thing that piqued my interest, every time I go on holiday, usually European holidays, quite often Spain or an island.
Yeah.
The cricket.
No, I knew you were going to say crickets. I wish I'd said that you were going to say crickets, and then I could have proved that I knew you were going to say crickets, but I did know that you were going to say crickets.
They are deafening for their size. Yeah. I'm assuming it's crickets, and I'm assuming they're quite small. There might be loads of them, but, you know, of an evening, they're just so loud.
How much noise does a single cricket make, I wonder?
Yeah, could be not much. Yeah. Maybe there are hundreds or thousands of them, but, you know. But
you're right, though. Cricket, you're tiny. So small you can barely see them. You have to really stare at a tree for ages to see a cricket.
Yeah.
And yet the noise is spectacular. Hey, what about a mammal? I'm trying to think what are really loud. Some birds are pretty loud. I've got parakeets like everyone in West London. I've got parakeets coming out of my ears. And they're pretty loud, pound for pound, but I don't imagine they're close. So that's what we're talking about. It's almost like decibel per gram, isn't it?
Pretty much, yeah.
That's
yeah,
a lovely question.
If you make them all the same size, then what would make the most noise?
The loudest living creature, pound yes. for pound, as it were, or decibel for gram, or if indeed they were all the right size. I can think of a few former colleagues that might fit into that category, but I don't think they'd quite get over the cricket. Thank you, Richard. 0345 6060973, if you know the answer to that. Could be underwater, couldn't it? Hayley's in Halifax. Hayley, question or answer?
It's a question. Hi, James.
Hello, Hayley. What's the question?
So my question is, when I am right-handed and when I use a knife and fork, I use the fork in my left hand,
yeah.
and I have no problem getting the food to my mouth.
Yeah.
If I'm just using a fork or a spoon, like cereal or something, why can't I eat with my left hand? Why do I have to use my right hand to get the food to my mouth?
Have you tried turning the fork upside down? Or rather the right way up when you're eating with your left hand so that you're stabbing stuff rather than scooping it up?
Oh, I don't know if I have.
Because
I've done it with pasta as well. Like stabbing pasta.
And you can't, I mean, you can do it a bit. What you can't do is use your left hand like your right hand when you're shoveling, right? When you're shoveling food. I'm sorry, you're a lady, Hayley. You would never shovel food.
I'm not, no.
but do you see what I mean? That doesn't feel right in your hand immediately. You don't know quite where to put it. It's why people who write left-handed have such a different stance and have to write over the page. But if you were using it to, like, poke, I can't believe I'm miming this on the radio, but if you were just stabbing a strawberry with a fork and putting that in your mouth, you'd actually be okay. So you're not comparing like with like. When you use your fork with a knife, you're holding, your knuckles are pointing upwards, aren't they?
Yes.
But if you're trying to eat with a fork solo, your knuckles are pointing downwards.
But if I'm using, say I'm eating peas with a fork, and
yeah.
I'm doing it not the way my mother taught me.
Yeah.
And I'm using like a shovel, and I'm putting them on with the knife.
Yeah.
I can still get the fork to my mouth without it feeling awkward. It's the movement up to my mouth that feels awkward and unsteady.
It's going to be, I'm not going to get this right, but the answer when it comes, if it comes, is going to be the same as it would be if you were asking about handwriting. It's because the mechanics of our bodies and our bones are such that the shapes and the movements that you describe are comfortable if you favour your right hand and really uncomfortable if you favour your left hand. But I like that question. What made you think of it? Did you hurt yourself? Did you hurt your right hand? You nearly starved.
No, I was trying to eat while working the other day,
yeah.
and I was using my right hand and my mouth, and
yes.
I couldn't eat, and I was like, this is a question hour question.
There it certainly is, and it's on the board. Hayley, thank you. Why is it so hard? Because you can eat, you can use a fork with your left hand when you've got a knife in your right hand, but when you haven't got a knife in your right hand and you're trying to eat a meal with a fork in your left hand, if you are right-handed, it's a right old palaver. In fact, close to impossible. Why, please? 03456060973. I don't know why I get so amused by this. Probably because the technology is still quite new. But people living on catch up. Is anyone actually living on catch up? People listening. We're all living on catch up, aren't we, these days? The people listening on catch up who've forgotten that they're listening on catch up message me quite regularly. Here's one. James, I love you, but it was Mick Jones, not Joe Strummer. Yeah, thank you, mate. Only 2 hours out of date. It's Julie in Telford next. Julie, question or answer?
A question, please, James.
Carry on, Julie.
Thank you. Love your show.
Thank you.
This is a bit of a weird question, but my son was, well, well, still is renovating an old cottage.
Oh,
and
lovely.
It had been empty for ages, and so it had that really old, musty smell from
yes.
damp and being empty. And his clothes used to stink. I mean, when he used to walk into our house, I used to go, oh, God, that really smells. So
yes.
I Googled old wives' tale, put them in the freezer.
Oh.
So I actually put three different types of clothes in the freezer, like a jeans and a woolly top.
Is there,
left them
after you've washed them, or instead of
no,
washing them?
No, this was while they were still yucky.
Stinky, okay.
Stinky.
Mm.
Put them in the emptied one of the drawers, put them in the freezer, left them for 2 hours. To my surprise, when I took them out, the smell had completely gone.
Right.
I mean, and I've been washing the clothes, with fabric conditioner and extra boost that they sell on the shelves.
Yeah, yeah.
And it just was not moving these smells whatsoever. So my question is, does that mean nothing smells in the North Pole or anything like that? Because it's so cold.
I thought you were just going to say why. I love the way your mind works. Instead of just saying, why is that, James? What's the science? You've gone, I don't know, four chapters further into the book. Why does that mean that nothing in a really cold place smells
cold
of anything?
Place. Exactly.
But I want to know why putting them in the freezer works first.
Well, there's two questions then.
You're not
maybe.
Allowed
maybe
two questions, Julie.
Sorry.
You're not allowed two questions.
I'd rather the North Pole question, please, James.
No, I know you would. I'm not going to. I can't. I mean, you know, your decision is final. So just to clarify, you'd stick them in the washing and they wouldn't. The smells wouldn't come out. But
no,
when you put them in the freezer, even before you'd washed them.
Yes, absolutely. It was. There was no smell whatsoever. And I'm telling you, they really smell.
Yeah, no, I do completely believe you. So that means in freezing environments, you wouldn't be able to smell anything.
Well,
That's
haven't, you know, put a
perfume. I like it. How's the cottage coming along?
Still coming along, you know what these things are like, money pits.
You're telling me, mate. Honestly, I was just thinking about that this morning. It's not a good road to go down. It's like that time I calculated how much money I must have spent on coffee over all the years I've worked at LBC, and I thought I could have bought a small car for that. Why can't you just have a glass of water instead? But you're right, money pit is the word. It's no Tom Hanks film, I think, called The Money Pit. Anyway, thank you, Julie. It's 12:15.
This is LBC. Because you never know what little pickles will get themselves into. For pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
A safe trip begins with TRIP. Take a road trip with your family, get there safely. Do your trip checks. T, top up on island fuel. R, rest every 2 hours too. I, inspect tire your pressure and tread. P, prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with TRIP. A safe trip begins with TRIP.
Do the four trip checks before every journey. National Highways.
Save this summer with Lidl Plus. Get 2 for £7 on burgers, jumbo sausages and more. And get 2 for £3.50 on our plant burgers, veggie sausages and more veggie classics. Download Lidl Plus and start saving this summer today.
18 plus GB only while stocks last. Terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/LPTV. Offer ends 27th of August.
Outlet shopping at the O2. Get up to 70% off RRP on over 60 designer brands, including Nike, Adidas, Levi's, Sunglass Hut, the cosmetics company store, Le Creuset, and more. Plus, why not make a day of it with over 30 bars and restaurants, a cinema, bowling, interactive football, and more. There's so much to do at the O2 this summer. Find us at North Greenwich, just 15 minutes from central London. Search Outlet Shopping at the O2 to start planning your visit.
Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. This is LBC.
It's 12:16 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. So I'm just thinking now, if you had a rug that a cat had weed on and you could somehow get it, you could fit it in a chest freezer, couldn't you? Because that's one of the hardest smells to get rid of, even with all the products that Julie was talking about. If you put it in a chest freezer, would that work as well? Would it work on a rug? Just asking for a friend. questions on the board so far. What is the loudest living thing in terms of pound for pound? Thank you to everybody who suggested it might be your humble presenter. But no, I've got a full range of volumes, and the highest is nowhere near as loud as some other creatures we can think of. So, but you need to do it sort of decibels per gram, as it were, and then what comes out. I think I meant cicadas when I talked about crickets earlier, or when Richard and I were talking about crickets. It's probably cicadas that we were actually thinking of, as Stu points out, as a fellow Grecophile. I should have been across that. Why can you eat with a fork when you've got a knife in your right hand, but when you try to eat only with a fork in your left hand with no knife, everything goes a bit wrong? And can you smell anything in the North Pole? I like that question a lot. Julian is in Maidenhead. Julian, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Carry on, Julian.
So, we're all familiar with buying pasta, and a lot of the pasta that we buy is basically pasta cut from what is essentially a sheet.
Correct.
But what I don't understand is why pastas start off being sold as straight sheets, all packed together very, very tightly, very efficiently, with very little space wasted to air. But I've done my research. I've gone to the shops, James. I've gone to various shops, Waitrose, Asda, Sainsbury's, Tesco's, all of the brands.
Yeah.
And I found that they're straight cut pasta, like cappellini, spaghetti, linguine, bucatini. Although bucatini does have a hole in it, so it's actually extruded. But they sell these nice and straight packages, which are very, very efficient because you're not paying. There's not a lot of volume taken up by useless air.
But I think this road leads to Tagliatelle.
It does. It leads to Tagliatelle, but it continues after Tagliatelle, James.
You're going
to
use the word nests.
Well, yes, in nests of Tagliatelle, Pappardelle, and another one called Tagiarin some Piedmontese. But then it goes straight again, because you've got fettuccine, mafalde, and obviously the big one, lasagna, which are all sold as, again, back to being straight.
Yeah, I know the answer.
Very good. Please, okay. Elucidate.
I will. Imagine if you dropped a 5-sheet block of lasagna in a pan of boiling water. What would come out? What would happen?
You'd probably end up with a very, very thick block of pasta.
You'd get a brick. So lasagna can go straight because you're going to separate it before you cook it. Tagliatelle, and I think fettuccine is the interesting one here, or possibly linguine. There must be a point, like a golden ratio, at which point putting it straight into the water means it will stick together. They don't spread out. And tagliatelle is on the other side of wherever that mythical pasta line is compared to spaghetti, bucatini, linguine, fettuccine, all the other ones that you mentioned. It would just, because you think about it, imagine a packet of flat tagliatelle. Let's both imagine that, Julian.
All right, hold on.
Okay.
I'm there. I'm with you.
Right, so we're just going to open the top. Try not to use your teeth. I've just got the top off the packet, and you're emptying it into your hand, and you've got like a hefty wedge of tagliatelle in your hand, and you're chucking it in the pan, and it's not going to separate, mate. You might separate a bit, but you're going to end up with like 8-9 pieces of pasta when you've actually got 30 pieces of tagliatelle.
Respectfully, if you have a very narrow way.
Go on. Mate.
Oh yeah. Oh no. I'll do it today.
Go there.
I'm going there. All right, fine. In that case, I'll see you next Thursday and confirm the findings of your proclamation. I don't think that's possible. You have to have a very, very narrow pan in order to not.
It must
be, able
be because you make
out.
It when you make tagliatelle at home and you lay it over the back of a chair, or you put it on a clothes thing. I mean, you can store it straight, but because it's folded over when you store it, you're going to be chucking it in the pan already separated. It doesn't, I mean, it just can't be. I don't see how it can be anything else because of the way that you asked the question.
So you're not actually qualified to know.
No, God, no.
Correct?
No. And other people have been in touch telling me that I've got it horribly wrong and I don't even know how to pronounce tagliatelle. Is it tagliatelle?
Possibly.
Tagliatelle. Tagliatelle. Why? Why is tagliatelle sold in nests? And pretty much everything else is sold in sheets or straight. I like the question. I think I've answered it, but I am more than happy to accept that I may not. If you had a massive pot, I don't know what difference that would make. Julian, well played. Bob's in Leeds. Bob, question or answer?
Question, please.
Carry on, Bob.
Picture frames. Where do they come from? why do I need to spend £30 to put a £10 picture up on my wall? Who popularised the picture frame?
People who wanted to protect their pictures.
Yeah, but, I mean, look back at the Egyptians. They were just knocking it up on a bit of rock, weren't they?
Yeah, but, I mean, it wouldn't necessarily
Greeks,
have...
Romans.
No, I don't know that this is a helpful historical comparison. I mean... the Victoria, probably you've got photographs and paintings that you, yeah. not rock carvings. Although, listen, actually, Bob, if you wanted to protect a rock carving, you could do a lot worse than put a glass case over it, couldn't you?
You could indeed.
They just didn't
indeed.
Have glass
you
know at the time. They didn't have glass.
It's going to last a bit longer than a picture,
yes,
isn't it?
They didn't have glass at the time, though. So I suspect the invention of glass...
Is it glass? Yes. Was it the invention of glass that then popularised the picture frame? And who did it? Who popularised it?
Who
convinced everybody to start sticking their pictures
I like that
overpriced
question.
Picture frames?
I mean, you've got a bit of a bee in your bonnet about the price of them.
I do. I've got a lot of pictures, and I just don't have the money for frames. That's my problem.
Yeah, it is expensive, but you're better off going to IKEA and buying your own. And I mean, take them to a frame. I don't want to put any framers out of business. Goodness, God forbid. But it is extraordinarily expensive. It's a proper skill being a picture framer.
You can get cheap ones.
You can get perfectly nice cheap ones. They just don't look as good.
No, they don't.
So the frame itself,
yes,
would have. I mean, it just looks a lot nicer than an unfinished canvas. That actually looks quite. I've got an unfinished canvas hanging on my wall because I'm quite cool like that. But if it was a, you know, a fancy house a hundred years ago, you'd want a nice frame on it because an unfinished canvas actually looks really messy around the edges, right? So that's where the idea of a frame comes from. But then the invention of glass meant that you could protect pictures also from the elements and the atmosphere within the frame that was invented for reasons other than... So the frame itself... Who knew I knew so much about this? The frame itself is aesthetic. The glass is protection.
But who put both together and started knocking them out?
Yeah,
that's what
right.
I want to know.
No, you're on. Okay, you're on. Who put the glass in the frame? 0345 6060973. When was the first picture frame? Or photo frame, like glass frame, in the classic... Because if you ever see an unframed canvas, you often see them in... For example, you often see them in crime heist films when they've stolen a painting and they're carrying... And it looks a bit rubbish if it's not in a frame. Because all the paint around the edges of the canvas is blurry and smudged. Stick it in a frame, looks lovely. I like that question, actually. I wasn't sure I was going to at the beginning, but it ended up really nicely. Mark's in Torquay. Mark, question or answer?
Question, James.
Carry on.
Okay, so I'm ironing my shirts this morning.
Lovely.
Packing them, going to travel to London, actually.
Very nice. And, be careful, mate. Don't wear any jewellery, will you, or a watch? And look out for all the people on the trains in balaclavas. It's not flipping out. Don't go near the West End, whatever you do. It's a war zone out there. It's a war zone out there, Mark.
I'll make sure to keep my Oyster cards firmly in my pocket.
That's the spirit. Yes, carry on.
So, I like a nice starch shirt.
Yes.
So I'm using aerosol starch, and all the aerosols I've ever used, and this goes back to when I was a kid, it's got a little mark on the rim that you have to align the nozzle up with to spray it, and it's in the instructions. It's got a little, like, paint mark on the rim.
Oh, yeah.
And it says you have to align the nozzle to spray it, and it's on no other aerosol.
Oh.
It's not on spray paint or air freshener or... furniture polish, anything, but you have to align the nozzle up with this little mark.
Oh.
I want to know why.
I do now as well, because, I mean, it can't be any more hazardous than all the other things you've mentioned, can it?
No. And it's the can cylindrical, the propellant is cylindrical, and it's a liquid inside, so why does it have to be in a certain direction?
Otherwise it doesn't work. I've never noticed that. I don't starch my shirts. Although I'm thinking of starting. You recommend it, do you?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, putting them in a suitcase, they'll come out crumpled if you don't starch them.
People may have noticed that I have slightly lower standards than you do, Mark, when it comes to it. And I've forgot these.
I do know. I do normally, but I'm going to see my boys in London, so I'm making a special effort.
Hey, steer clear of those no-go zones, mate, all right? Can't be too careful these days. I love that question. Well, I didn't even know that. Why is it only on starch at the Arrow... and the nozzle have to align before it will work. And have a lovely trip, Mark, seriously. 27 minutes after 12 is the time. I should stress, because we live in a post-irony universe. I was joking then. It's people like Nigel Farage and some of his other politicians keep portraying London as a deeply dangerous place full of balaclava-clad youths on trains where you can't wear a watch or an engagement ring and people would not dare go out after dark. Those of us who live in London and do go out after dark and use public transport every day have no recognition whatsoever of this portrayal, which seems at the very least distinctly unpatriotic. But anyway, more of that on another day. Stanley is in Lincoln. Stanley, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on.
So I just wanted to provide an answer to the smell in the North Pole. So, James, actually... Yes. In the cold, when the sense of smell depends on the ability of the molecules to be transported and also on the mucus lining in the nose and also the blood flow in the nose. So in the cold, the blood flow to the nose reduces. That's one of the reasons why the sense of smell becomes even less. And then secondly, the molecules that you need to smell, they need to be carried actually in moisture. So when you've got very, very cold weather, that transportation from the particle to the nose is nearly blunted out. So you don't have that ability those molecules that cannot actually get to the nose because of the extreme low temperatures.
You've answered the question from the wrong end, Stanley. But you have actually answered it correctly. You haven't explained why the smells come out of Julie's son's clothes when she puts them in the washing machine, not in the North Pole. But that wasn't the question.
Okay. But
what are your qualifications?
I'm a doctor, and it's from my knowledge of anatomy and physiology of the blood flow to the nose.
No, I think you're right. I think you've provided the right answer. But and Julie was very strict about the fact that that's the question she wanted answering. But the reason why you don't smell much or anything at the North Pole is not necessarily the same as the reason why she gets the smell out of her son's clothes when she puts them in the freezer, although that is probably a contributing factor in addition to the anatomically based explanation that you have so expertly provided.
Well, I think you can look at it from this point of view, James, because the temperature in the freezer is different from the temperature outside the freezer.
Yes.
So
well
there's
spotted.
No problem with smelling outside the freezer.
No, because they don't start smelling again when they've defrosted. Something happens. I suspect that some bacteria gets killed when it's in the freezer, you see.
Exactly, yeah.
Right, but that's not... So, this is the first time this has ever happened on this show, is that you've actually managed to answer the question from the end rather than the beginning. But you've done a brilliant job.
Thank you, James.
No, thank you, Stanley. Have a round of applause on me.
Thank you.
Beautifully done. Absolute moment. Thomas Watts is here with the headlines.
The Bank of England has cut borrowing costs for the fifth time in a year. Policymakers voted to reduce the base rate by a quarter point to 4%, in line with economists' expectations. The first migrants have been detained under Britain's new one-in, one-out deal with France. The Home Office says it's prepared to defend itself against any legal challenges and return them to France within weeks. The Homelessness Minister, Roshanara Ali, is facing calls to resign over reports about her rental property in East London. She reportedly increased the rent by £700 a month after evicting her previous tenants. LBC weather, sunshine and showers across Scotland and Northern Ireland, mostly dry and cloudy elsewhere, a high of 25 degrees.
LBC.
The seagull says, your IKEA food favourites are now available in Brighton. Meatballs, plant balls, fish and chips. All delicious. Especially the chips. Yum. IKEA Brighton, open 14th of August. IKEA, the wonderful everyday.
Chase is the digital bank you can rely on with helpful 24/7 customer service.
So I can speak to a real person anytime.
Yep. even when you're juggling the summer holiday plans. And you get a handy 1% cash back on everyday transport.
Like on my commute home from work.
Roger that. Join millions of customers and see what your money can do with Chase. Download the Chase app today. 18 plus UK residents eligibility applies. 1% cash back on debit card spending on groceries, everyday transport and fuel for your first year. Max £15 per month. Exceptions apply.
This is your business. This is your business supercharged with the help of Xero Accounting Software. This is managing cash flow. This is managing your cash flow with the help of Xero Accounting Software. These are your customers paying you. These are your customers having more ways to pay you with the help of Xero Accounting Software. This is your business supercharged with the help of Xero, helping you sort your cash flow by giving your customers more ways to pay, so now you can focus on making your business boom. Supercharge your business today with the help of Xero.
It's a chilled summer's day. The twins are splashing in the paddling pool while Mrs. Thing puts her feet up. She's proper chuffed, having saved money on a British Gas boiler service. It's like an MOT for your boiler. Just £79, reduced from £109. Bliss! Well, it was nice while it lasted. British Gas. Taking care of things. Visit britishgas.co.uk to learn more and see full T's and C's. Sale ends 9th of September 2025. Offer available to new boiler service contract customers.
This is LBC Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973.
It is 12:33 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where Mystery Hour continues. What is the loudest animal in terms of sort of decibels per gram? And any living creature will do. I think we've answered Julie's question. But Stanley was such a quality contributor. We actually answered my question as well, but between us. But he went all in on the North Pole and delivered full satisfaction. Why is it so hard to eat a fork with a fork on its own, but it's actually quite a useful implement in your left hand, when you've got a knife in your right hand? Why is tagliatelle, and I'm now being sent loads of pictures of packets of tagliatelle that are not nests. I don't know whether that destroys Julian's question or my answer. When did we start using photo frames? And why does Mark Starch have an arrow that you need to align with the nozzle before it'll work when no other aerosols do? Some lovely questions here. 12:34 is the time. Mark is in Streatham. Mark, question or answer?
It's a question, James.
Carry on, mate.
I'm taking you're familiar with how a defibrillator works. So if somebody has a cardiac arrest, you know, they put the two paddles on and they get an electric shock and it brings them hopefully back to life.
I'm familiar with that bit of it, yeah. I wouldn't be able to go into much further detail.
No, that's me neither.
No,
but
carry
my
on.
Question is, in an emergency, if somebody had a cardiac arrest, could somebody with a taser do the same job as a defibrillator?
Oh, that's a lovely question. Isn't it?
Yeah, and what prompted the question
is... It's a bit MacGyver. Do you remember MacGyver on the telly? It's a little bit MacGyver, isn't it? Oh, we need a defibrillator, but we haven't got one. Hey, pass me your taser, officer.
Exactly. And to be blunt, I was thinking, you know, the Met could do with a bit of positive publicity, so if they did, you know... If it works, that is. Exactly. They could, as you say, get a twofer.
Yeah, oh, you're on. I shall try and find out. I mean, it may well be that it's a daft question, but I like it and you like it, so it's worth asking. Someone will be listening, oh, my goodness me, you don't understand the difference between AC and DC, do you? Or something like that, I don't know. But it'd be good if it were true. I doubt it, but it'd be nice to know. Thank you, Mark. Lovely question. 12:35 is the time. 03456060973 is the number you need. Let's go to Southfields. Dan is there. Dan, question or answer?
Hi, James. It's a question.
Carry on.
So excited to get on my favourite programme on the radio.
Thank you. It's lovely to have you here.
Nice to be talking about something fun as well, for a change.
That's true.
So, the question mystery has been bugging me for years is about why different languages are understood by... let me explain myself better.
Yeah.
I speak Spanish as a first language. I can't understand hardly any Portuguese and a little bit of Italian. But most of my Italian and Portuguese friends understand way more Spanish than I understand Portuguese or Italian.
Oh.
And I thought maybe it was just me being thick. And I was speaking to...
I was trying to think of a polite way of asking.
Yeah, it's all right. Yeah, thanks, Dave. But I was speaking to a Norwegian friend about this.
Oh, yes.
And they said it's exactly the same in Swedish and Norwegian. Norwegians can understand Swedish. I think I've got this the right way around.
Sure.
Way more than Swedes can understand Norwegian. And I was like, well, so what is this bi-directional kind of difference between the two languages? I've even tried to Google it because,
So it's about the direction of traffic, isn't it? There's more traffic moving in one direction from, for example, Italian to Spanish than there is in the other direction from Spanish to Italian or from Portuguese to Spanish than Spanish to Portuguese. And and there's a equivalent in Scandinavia, and we're confident that other people have experienced and recognised this.
Absolutely, absolutely. But it doesn't seem to be an... You know, you'd think if there were a set number of common words that it would be the same both ways, right? So there are words that are very similar in both languages, like, you know, they're the same as Spanish.
Could it be
French,
accent?
You know?
Could it be accent?
I don't know.
Like the Portuguese and the Italian accents are harder, are more impenetrable than the Spanish accent, so a Spanish speaker may struggle more?
Possibly. I may just be, you know, not very clever and
it's definitely not that. It's definitely not that. I think
it's more than that.
Yeah, the two-way traffic, Keith says. Americans can't understand some English. I don't think that's relevant to this conversation necessarily, but I like it. 12:37 is the time. 03456060973 is the number. Richard is in King's Cross. Richard, question or answer?
Good afternoon, James. Thanks for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
Question, please. So I was in Paris last week for a few hours.
Yeah.
And we were walking back to the Eurostar and walked past the Hotel Bristol.
Yeah.
Hotel Bristol. But which set me thinking, why are there so many Hotel Bristols around the world? In any big city, there's a Hotel Bristol. So Paris, Barcelona, Budapest, Asuncion. Mm. In Asuncion in Paraguay, there's a Hotel Bristol. I've stayed there.
Really?
They're normally sort of older hotels, not very expensive, 2 or 3 stars.
I like it. The one in Paris is quite smart, isn't it?
There's a few in Paris, there is a part one.
You're probably looking at a Duke, aren't you? Don't you reckon?
Maybe. You don't get Hotel Liverpool or Hotel Belfast.
No, but that means that there wasn't...
Gloucester.
So I think you're probably going to find, if there is an answer to this question, that you had a kind of 18th or 19th century aristocrat. No longer, is there a Marquis of Bristol or an Earl of Bristol?
Yeah, I think so. Wandering the world.
Yes.
Setting up hotels.
Not setting up hotels, no, but buying a lot of stuff and delighting the locals with his largesse.
Maybe. What about to Gloucester then?
Well, is there a Gloucester?
Well, why isn't there Gloucester hotels?
There wasn't an Earl of Gloucester tooling around the world living it large.
A particular man.
Yeah, I reckon. It's all I've got.
He did get.
That's the thing about travel, Richard. You get around, or it would be because Bristol was a port, a very big port.
There's Liverpool or Belfast.
Yeah, but they were different ports.
Yes,
they faced the other way.
They didn't have the Marquis.
No, I sense you're being a bit sniffy about my suggestion. You're going to feel pretty daft if it's correct, aren't you?
Head and shame. Anyway.
Why are there so many Bristol hotels? I like the question.
I know.
It's a lovely question. Thank you. 12:40 is the time. Why are there so many Bristol hotels? If you can't find a defibrillator, could you use a taser? Why do you have to align the arrows on a starch can in a ways that you don't have to do on any other cans? When did the photo frame come from? Why is tagliatelle sold in nests? Well, most other pastas are sold in straight sort of lines. And the fork and the loud animal. There's quite a lot to get through. Gordon's in Torquay. Honestly, you wait ages for a call from Torquay and then two come along at once. Question or answer, Gordon?
I'm not Torquay.
We're never going to know unless we improve the quality of that phone and then get you back on shortly. It's coming up to 12:41. Doug is in Brighton, staying by the seaside. I'm turning into Jeff Stelling. Doug, question or answer?
Hi, James. It's an answer.
Carry on, Doug.
Well, I'm here to supply all your insect-based trivia needs. You were heading in the right direction when you suggested underwater might be an answer, because I think the overall loudest animal is a blue whale. But if we're talking animals relative to their size, there is a little species of water boatman. Now, it's only a couple of millimetres long, but it can produce basically a noise of around 90 decibels, which is a bit similar to a petrol-powered lawnmower, for example.
Good grief, really?
Yeah.
And if you were to scale that up to a human size, it would be like a human shouting at you at about the same sort of volume as the space shuttle taking off. So
no way. Why do they need to be? What's the evolutionary advantage of being so loud? Do you know?
It's used to attract the ladies.
Yeah, but why do the ladies like such a loud
noise? I don't know. No. But it might be something to do with how it actually makes the noise.
Ah, how does it actually make the noise? Don't say anything rude. I don't want...
Okay. I'll try not to. It's a process called stridulation.
Oh, no.
And strap in for this. I'll make this as sanitised as I can.
Oh, no.
It's made by rubbing its manhood against its abdomen.
Okay, so he's waving his willy around, really. That is what Keith suggested as a joke.
No, that's exactly what it does.
Well, you live and learn. Is there any link between size and... Volume and volume, if you prefer, so that kids could be announcing the louder it is,
The louder it is, the more ladies it can attract.
Oh, no. qualifications? I know, but other people don't.
I studied paleoentomology at university.
Was this a whole module or just an aside?
It was quite a sizable module.
Yes, well, that attracts the ladies. Thank you, Doug. Round of applause.
Thank you.
That's a perfect answer as well. I love that. I hope Richard is happy. Andrew is in Fulham. Andrew, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on, Andrew.
I have an answer to the question around the defibrillator and taser.
I think you're going to be a bit of a killjoy.
I might be.
Yes, because you know what you're talking about, I sense, whereas Mark and I, we clearly don't, and that's why we got quite excited about the question. But facts matter, Andrew. What are the facts?
The facts are that they are not interchangeable. You couldn't use one in place of the other.
Why not?
And this is for the simple reason that you don't know what you're dealing with when somebody's having a heart attack or an issue with their heart. What the defibrillator actually does, it doesn't just apply the shock, it also does a quick scan of the heart to see whether or not a shock is applicable in that situation.
Right.
You wouldn't get that with the taser.
Would it be worth the pop? I mean, in the absence of anything else, why not?
No. It wouldn't work. It wouldn't work. If it's something that would work, we would be trained in it. I'm actually a police officer, so I am trained how to use defibrillators and how they have to be positioned in specific places as well. The tasers kind of, when they fire out, you've got no accuracy to say exactly where the two tasers are going to go.
Yeah.
Whereas the pads need to go in very, very specific places.
Yeah.
Because they then have to send the charge through the body to connect to the two pads.
It sounds pretty comprehensive. Just out of interest, I mean, is there anything else you can use a taser for?
No, there isn't.
He called it a twofer. Mark said it could be a twofer. You've got a twofer taser. But no, it is just a taser. Is there anything else you can use a defibrillator for?
No.
But you can't use either of them for what you use the other one for. Qualifications, yes. Trained defibrillator, but not trained with a defibrillator, but not with a taser.
I'm trained with a defibrillator, but not a taser. My husband actually saved somebody's life using a defibrillator, so...
I mean, that's dog bites man, mate. If he saved someone's life using a taser, he'd get a Ray Liotta. And you'd win a board game. But as it is, you only get a round of applause. Thank you, mate. Helen's in Preston. Helen, question or answer?
It's an answer.
Carry on, Helen.
Finally, this strange little bit of information I got a few years ago has come in handy.
Well, hang on, let's not run before we can walk. I'll be the judge of that, Helen.
So as I stayed at the Hotel Bristol in Salzburg, which beautiful hotel, and I asked them why it was called the Hotel Bristol after a couple of whiskies at the bar. And the guy said that actually it was named after the fourth Earl of Bristol.
Get in.
Exactly. A 19th century traveller who was thought to be a connoisseur and very sort of rich. And so they all named their hotels after him to sort of be attached to that sense of luxury. So they're not the same chain. It's just lots of Hotel Bristols around the world because of the fourth Earl of Bristol.
He got a kind of rep. Didn't he? That's all. Whether he deserved it or not, and he wouldn't have visited all the places that had a Hotel Bristol, but he obviously had a cachet among the reading classes, who would also be the travelling classes, and the Earl of Bristol became like a synonym for you know, urbane luxury travel.
Yeah.
Beautiful answer. Qualifications? I know you told us, but tell us again.
I went to stay at the Hotel Bristol in Salzburg, and I asked them why it was the Hotel Bristol after a couple of whiskies.
That's fantastic. And they told you. And that counts. It may not be completely definitive. There may be other versions, but I love it. Not least because it means I could, if I was minded to, I could share in your round of applause, but I'm far too generous.
Thank you.
No, thank you, Helen. Reminds me of the old Earl of Dartmouth and the very well-known story of how darts was invented. It's often when a mystery presents itself that contains a word or an allusion to an old aristocrat, it often turns out to be that there's an earl in history who is responsible for the modern nomenclature. It's the same with darts. I must tell you that story one day.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Starmer's choice, who stays and who sent back to France. And Kemi Badenoch lost her faith when a bad thing happened. Has she read the Bible?
Sheila Fogarty on LBC.
A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P. Take a road trip with your family, get there safely. Do your trip checks. T, tap upon island fuel. R, rest every 2 hours too. I, inspect tire pressure and tread. P, prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P. A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P.
Do the 4 trip checks before every journey. National Highways.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Huh. Have you ever wondered what a sandwich sounds like? Not much to it, is there? Unless, of course, it's a Walker's sandwich. Mmm, that is good. Now that's what a sarnie should sound like. Go all crisp in with Walker's. Delicious.
Save this summer with Lidl Plus. Get 2 for £7 on burgers, jumbo sausages and more. And get 2 for £3.50 on our plant burgers, veggie sausages and more veggie classics. Download Lidl Plus and start saving this summer today.
18 plus TV only while stocks last. Terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/LPTV. Offer ends 27th of August.
The people have spoken. Drivers have voted. And the Auto Express Driver Power Family Car of the Year is, wait for it, the Vauxhall Astra. Chosen for its design, drive and onboard tech. Get behind the wheel and experience the award-winning Vauxhall Astra Griffin Hatch or Sports Tourer today. Two models, one offer. Both £325 a month with £325 initial rental. Search Astra Griffin now. Personal contract hire and Astra Griffin 1.2 manual hatchback or Sports Tourer. 48 months, T's and C's, subject to status and availability. You will not own the car. Stellantis Financial Services.
Check your retirement savings are on track with PensionBee's easy-to-use app. Because when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. When investing, your capital is at risk.
Pump 6 in this meal deal, please.
Let's play Rate My BP Meal Deal.
OK.
You chose an M&S chicken and bacon pasta, Magnum ice cream and a Wild Bean Cafe iced latte. That's a 10. A perfect warm weather combo.
Am I on a holiday?
No. BP Meal Deal. One deal, millions of combinations. All for £6.
T's and C's apply, subject to availability at BP M&S stores only. For details, see bp.com/latest offers.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
It is 10 to 1. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Questions still in need of answers. The fork, the pasta, the photo frame, we've done the taser, the starch, and the languages. Is there anything else on the list? I think did I answer one? I did. No, I can't. Anyway, we've got to crack on. Liz is in Wimbledon. Liz, question or answer?
Answer, please, James.
Carry on.
Hello, how are you?
Very well, Liz. Great, let's crack on.
Yeah. It's quite a boring answer. It's basically because tagliatelle is made with egg. And when it dries, it's much more brittle than all the pasta like spaghetti and linguine and all the shapes. Which
that's
are
not boring.
That's
not boring at all. That's fascinating. So there's no egg in all the other pastas?
There is sometimes.
Right.
But you'll find those pappardelle sometimes packaged differently in those boxes inside the cellophane because it's basically very brittle as it dries. That's why when you make it at home, you hang it up for a while on the back of a chair or a spaghetti tree, but then you're supposed to coil it into little nests as it finishes drying.
And that makes it less likely to break up rather than less likely to stick in the
exactly.
in the pot. So my answer was completely wrong.
Well, I don't understand physics, but I bet somebody will understand why making it into a nest gives it some sort of structural integrity.
Yeah, and what about the packets?
That's above my pay grade.
I'm being sent pictures of packets of tagliatelle that is not in nests, but I don't know that that disproves your theory at all.
Well, it might be tagliatelle not made with egg.
Oh,
and it's probably also just become custom and practice. I bet it's also something that makes it look a bit sort of handmade and...
Qualifications?
I just love Italian food, cook a lot, go to Italy a lot, but I'm not a chef.
What's your cacio e pepe recipe?
Oh, well, it only has three ingredients. Pecorino, pepper, and pasta.
I see. Eleanor didn't know that. Eleanor puts butter in hers, Liz.
Well, there's been a controversy, hasn't there? I read about it in the paper.
There certainly has. That's why we were discussing it. That's why we've been discussing
it. It's really hard to make, actually.
It is very hard to make. It is very hard.
Yeah, there's a lot of skill. I'm not very good at it. I always end up with some emulsified.
Practice makes perfect, Liz. Practice makes perfect.
It tastes fine.
Yeah, well, that's all right. That's all that matters. But as long as you don't put butter in it like a heathen. Don't put butter in it like a heathen.
And no parmesan.
Like a barbecue. No, it's got to be pecorino. It's saltier. It's a sheep's cheese, not a cow. Round of applause for Liz, please.
Thank you.
Grazie mille. 12:53 is the time. John is in Lisbon. John, question or answer?
Answer, please, James.
Carry on, John.
Well, I can't speak for our Scandinavian brothers and sisters, but here in Portugal, for instance, we grew up consuming a lot of Spanish pop culture.
Okay.
So I boil it down to two things, exposure and cultural production.
Would that apply to the Italians as well? I don't think it would it?
I'm sorry, I dropped you for a second.
That's quite all right. He said Italians. He said Italians also find it easier to get their head around Spanish than he does as a Spaniard to get his head around Italian.
We have, for instance, in Portugal and some other countries, we have more of a tradition of subtitling than dubbing over.
Okay.
So we tend to be more exposed throughout our lives to the sonority of foreign languages than, for instance, a Frenchman would. Or, for instance, in Poland, I believe they used to have one person doing the voiceovers for all the people, and the same kind of happens in Arabic, where the most commonly understood forms of Arabic are Egyptian and Syrian, or Levantine generally, because those were the main centers of cultural production for most of the 20th century.
This is a beautiful answer, and it makes sense. So, it's two-way traffic. Literally, you have a greater familiarity on one side of that divide than you do on the other with the language on the other side of the divide. So, more Spanish into Portugal.
It also applies to Brazilian, Portuguese, European Portuguese, and Brazilian Portuguese. Although their Brazilian Portuguese is not homogenous, right? It's a very big country. But typically, because we're more used to hearing Brazilian Portuguese, we have an easier time adapting to it and learning
it. Makes perfect sense. Qualifications?
I speak five languages. I'm a tour guide and I teach languages.
Yeah, that'll do, John. Have a round of applause.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Overqualified, perhaps, if anything. Richard is in Fittleworth. Richard, question or answer?
It's an answer, James, or a theory, anyway.
Go on, then.
Okay. Normally, we eat with the fork in our left hand, knife in our right hand, So in that case, the fork is generally sitting there having food loaded upon it.
Yes.
Then the knife is put down, the fork rises to the mouth.
Correct.
Yes?
Yes.
Now, take the knife away.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, the fork's got to do all the work.
Yeah.
With your weaker hand, normally.
Yeah.
And quite often, left-handed people, eat the wrong way round, don't they?
Not to them, but to us.
Yeah, you know what I mean. There you go.
That's pretty strong, isn't it?
Well, it has a certain symmetry, yes.
Yeah, qualifications? Just thought about it.
I eat with a knife and fork.
Yeah, all right, clever clogs. I bet you eat just with a fork sometimes, don't you? What if you're having a chili con carne?
No, I eat with a spoon and fork, then.
Do you? Rice? Yeah. Right, yeah, all right. So you never eat just with a fork?
Very rarely. Only with the right hand, anyway.
Yeah, love it. I have a round of applause. I like that. Makes sense when you think about it. No, well played. Thank I like you. It. I get a bit wary when people say I've got a theory. But I think that theory is probably the truth. I like this message from Mark as well. I think we should take a moment to wish him a happy birthday. Thank you for getting an answer to my taser question. It's made my birthday, even if I'm going to have to find a new plot device for my first crime novel. Well, you hang in there, Mark. James is in Chelmsford. James, question or answer?
Answer, please, James.
Carry on, James.
It's a question about the glass in picture frames.
Marvellous.
You said quite correctly that the origin of the picture frame was to disguise the edge of painted canvases.
Yes.
The addition of glass goes back to the early days of photography when images were taken on glass plates. The reason being that photographic emulsion is very fragile and you need something that is rigid but also transparent in order to mount it on and to be able to view it. And so the whole glass plate, including the emulsion, would go into a picture frame. Then, when we start putting images onto more fragile things like paper, you would need the glass in the frame in order to protect it. So the glass was still a part of that process.
That's a beautiful answer. Qualifications?
Thank you. We have an upcoming art show which involves some photographs taken using those old Victorian methods by celebrated photographer Dave Shrimpton, and he told us all about it when we were doing the shoot.
Who's we?
My partner and I, we have a company. We are experts in English culture, and our art exhibition...
Aren't we all, mate? Aren't we all?
our art exhibition... is all about the forgotten culture of England. We've rediscovered a load of stuff and we're trying to bring it back. Would I be able to give it a little plug?
I'd be offended if you didn't.
It's got number and time and space, and it's at the Minories Gallery in Colchester, and it's the last 2 weeks of August, Wednesday to Sunday.
So those are, sadly, the 2 weeks that I'm on holiday, but the Minories Gallery in Colchester. What's the name of the exhibit again?
Time and Space.
Okay, this is like a joke. The phone line keeps... I'll have one more go. Go again, James.
Number in Time and Space.
Number in Time and Space.
That's right, yes.
Sensational. Round of applause for James. I love that. I'm intrigued now by this exhibition. And we're out of time. Good Lord, I do apologise. That is it from me for another day. I'm giving Stanley in Lincoln, I think, gets the board game. It was quite tricky this week, but his laugh just brought so much joy to so many people who took time out of their day to comment on the quality of his laugh that it's earned him a Mystery Hour board game. If you miss any of the show, including Stanley's laugh, you can listen back on Catch Up on Global Player and the LBC app, where you can stay up to date on the top stories and opinions. You can put your news categories in the order you want. You can pause, rewind live radio, listen to a range of podcasts. So do download the official LBC app for free. It's really good, from your app store now. Tom Sorbitt will be with you at 4 on LBC, but now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Thanks very much indeed, James. At 3, I want to talk about this comment made by the Conservative leader, Kemi Badenoch, about losing her faith because of the Joseph Fritzl story, a truly horrific story, albeit. But losing your religion because a bad thing happened... I understand it when people are devastated, but something that didn't happen to you, something you saw happen to somebody else. There's an awful lot of bad stuff going on in the world. Why lose your faith over one thing in particular? Maybe you have as well. We'll talk about that at 3. I want to begin the programme, though, by talking about the first migrants crossing the Channel to be detained in order to be sent back to France for their asylum claim, potentially to be considered there. What's the sifting process? How do they work it out?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, UK interest rates have been cut to their lowest level since March 2023, despite fears of a sharp rise in inflation. The Bank of England has cut the base rate by a quarter of a percentage point to 4%. It's the fifth consecutive reduction since August last year. Former Monetary Policy Committee member Andrew Sentence says many mortgage lenders have already factored it in.
This reduction in interest rates was widely anticipated. I don't think it's going to change mortgage prices very much. It's not going to feed through very much into the cost of borrowing for people with ordinary mortgages.
The first migrants making small boat crossings have been detained under the government's new one-in, one-out returns deal with France. The Home Secretary says they'll robustly defend any legal challenges to the policy. LBC's reporter Fraser Knight explains what will happen now.
The UK will refer those migrants that are in detention to France. They'll have up to 2 weeks to decide whether or not they will take them. It's expected they will, unless there are any concerns about national security when it comes to the French side. And then the Home Office says within the next 3 weeks, they hope that they will be returned back to Europe.
A Russian official says a venue has been chosen for a meeting between Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump, which could take place next week. The Kremlin has played down the possibility of Volodymyr Zelensky joining the summit. Homelessness Minister Roshanara Ali is facing criticism for hiking the rent on her property in East London. She reportedly increased it by £700 a month after evicting her previous tenants. A spokesperson for Miss Ali, who owns or part owns three properties in London, says she complied with all legal requirements. And ministers have announced plans for tougher restrictions on cowboy cosmetic procedures. It follows huge growth in unregulated treatments being carried out in homes, hotels and pop-up clinics. Hundreds of people have been maimed by botched Brazilian butt lifts and filler injections. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 68 points at 90.95. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather, breezy with sunshine and scattered showers for Scotland and Northern Ireland. Rain clearing to leave behind sunnier skies from Wales and Northern England. Drier but mostly cloudy elsewhere, a high of 25 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello, good afternoon to you. I have a question about this new one-in, one-out scheme that I'm not entirely sure will be answered anytime soon. We know, you'll have heard in the bulletin just there, the first migrants have been detained under this new so-called one-in, one-out deportation deal with France after crossing the English Channel. Pictures showed the migrants wearing life jackets disembarking from Border Force boats in Dover on Wednesday, so their own boat presumably had been intercepted near the shore. This is the first day the pilot scheme came into force. Now, the Home Office says that those people who have been detained rather than taken in for their asylum process to begin will be held in immigration removal centres until their return to France. And the Home Secretary, Yvette Cooper, said confidently she wouldn't confirm how many migrants are being held, but she's prepared to resist any legal challenges aimed at preventing their removal to France. My question is, and we can attempt to answer it between ourselves, really, but it won't be the definitive answer. But my question is, what exactly is the sifting process, if that's the right word, the decision-making process, the criteria? What are the criteria at that point on the border boats, on the Shingle Beach, to be able to decide at speed, as they clearly have today, that a certain number, we don't know what number, but a certain number are immediately told, no, you cannot make an asylum claim here. I wonder why. I wonder who can be told very quickly that they can make an asylum claim and who is told very quickly that they cannot and that they will be taken back to France. And then under that scheme that exists with France, some people who've already sought asylum in that country, in France, but want to go to Britain, that's the one in, one out bit, that somebody who's returned to France and another person comes to Britain with a concluded and legitimate asylum claim to come to this country. I just am keen to know what that process is. We'll only find out in time the effectiveness of this. The idea behind it is that it will just become less worth your while to spend the thousands of pounds that many people are spending, huge amounts of money to get over, that if they face, and by the way, the Home Secretary has said anybody coming over in boats can face deportation and or detention and deportation to France, that will reduce the numbers even trying. That's the big test, isn't it? That's why it's a pilot scheme, I guess. That's the big test. But what should the criteria be, in your view? Should it be about the country that you're from? Should it be about the degree to which you're able to identify yourself? Clearly, if you've got some intelligence on an individual that they are already a danger or a criminal or involved in criminal acts or have been through the country's asylum system and failed a number of times, then fine, you know, you... Maybe that's how they identify the people who can't come through and claim again. But I'm curious to know, what do you think the criteria should be? 0345 6060973, the number to call. You can text 84850. Speaking with me earlier this week, the Labour MP for Dover and Deal, Mike Tapp, you might remember, he explained how the return deal, will break down the smuggling gang's business models.
Let's look at the business model here. If you're selling cars, for example, and one in 17 of those cars is dodgy and breaks down, it's not going to take long for that to spread. And then your business model starts to break down. And that's where we're starting with this. People will start to get returned. That word will spread amongst others looking to cross, and it will, you know, seed that doubt.
Well, Sarah Pownall joins me, a border management and immigration expert who was former chief immigration officer for the UK Border Force, based at Heathrow Airport back in 2006 to 2011. Sarah, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
What's your sense of how this process works, particularly at that point of distinguishing who gets to make an asylum claim in the UK and who does not?
It's interesting that we've picked up on the same element, because I was reading, I can't remember if it was BBC or the government page, about how people are going to be identified as inadmissible. So, yes, I would have concerns over that as well, in that there are a large percentage of the people who are already claiming asylum through this route are being ultimately granted asylum. So unless the Home Office is going to sift people through by nationality and by age to say whether they are or aren't going to be put into this scheme, they were the first points I would look at. For example, if it's Albanians, there's been a recent agreement with the Albanian government, so those people are being removed to Albania. Their asylum claim is considered swiftly and they are being removed to Albania. So that has already been dealt with. But as to whether those, that, for example, a nationality